It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We've got Microsoft earnings, lots to talk about, and at the end, a big announcement. It's all coming up next. You won't want to miss this on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 800, recorded Wednesday, October 26th, 2022. Goodbye, heart. Windows Weekly is brought to you by NordLayer. NordLayer is a secure network access solution for your business. Join over 6,000-plus fully protected organizations. Go to nordlayer.com/twit to get your first month free when purchasing an annual subscription. And by Collide. Collide is an endpoint security solution that gives IT teams a single dashboard for all devices, regardless of operating system. Visit collide.com/ww to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. And by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV's training solutions provide professionals and enterprise organizations the education needed to kickstart or advance IT careers and upskill through engaging training and virtual labs. Get 30% off when you sign up at itpro.tv/windows and use the code WW30 at checkout. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. And there's a lot of news today because we have Earnings Learnings joining us for the Earnings Learnings call.
Bonanza.
Bonanza. From ZDNet, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mary Jo Foley. Hello, Mary Jo Foley.
Hello, Leo.
Good to see you. I give you Paul Thurrott. Mary Jo Thurrott. Good to see you. And welcome.
Thank you.
We had to consummate it eventually.
I have to say this because
you don't have to, really. I mean,
I have to say this. I could save it for the end, but then I think people would get a little miffed without the opportunity to thank Ms. Foley. It was 2008 when Mary Jo Foley first appeared on this show. Can you believe that?
Was that the upside down episode?
Welcome to the upside down.
Yeah, that's right. I would have thought it was later than that. I meant to look that up. I forgot.
Well, thank goodness I did, and Patrick Delahanty did, and we have determined that. And that was not. She was just a guest.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Did you know Mary Jo before?
I have stories to tell, Leo. I was going to save this for the end of the show.
You could save the stories for the end. You could save the stories for the end. That's fine. But did you know her?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did.
Yeah. Because she's a legend in
you'll enjoy our origin story.
Oh, I can't wait. There's 38 pages of...
It's a little bit... It's actually a lot like the Fast and the Furious movies, if it makes sense. we go way back. We used to be rivals, but then we became friends.
Aw.
Yeah.
So the very first episode was May 2nd, 2008.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mary Jo Foley, author of Microsoft 2.0, How Microsoft Plans to Stay Relevant in the Post-Gates Era. Should play a little bit of... Well, I won't, because you're going to hear... be very confusing. You were at internet-nexus.com at the time, Paul.
Yikes.
And winsupersite.com.
That's really... okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, that was my personal site at the time. Yeah.
So how long ago this was? That, however, was not the beginning of our journey together, because it was a little bit later that I don't know why we got this idea. And then she was on May 30th. Mm-hmm. So clearly there was something going on. Like we liked her.
Right.
And then January 9th, 2009, then February 6th, 2009,
mm-hmm.
then January 10th, 2009, then February 5th, 2010. But it wasn't until July 7th, 2011.
July 7th. Ooh.
That's when Mary Jo Foley became a regular on this program. So it is, that is...
2011.
Yeah, that's more than 11 years ago.
That's interesting.
You started with us as a regular episode 216, and here we are, episode 800.
Woo, phew.
Yep.
But I have to
I don't know if you guys remember, like, you guys just, like, hijacked me on air. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
I was guesting on the show, and at the end of the show, you and Leo said, "So what do you think about becoming the co-host of Windows Weekly?" And I was like, "What?"
Leo did that of his own volition. I want to be clear about that.
Yeah, I have no, Leo has, as you're learning right now, I have no impulse control.
I call that Bogarting.
I was just like, "What? What?" I'm like, "Can I think about it and give you an answer?" Because I was just like, so like.
Yeah. It's like someone proposing to someone on the Jumbotron and the woman's like, "I don't know if I want to do this, but thanks for putting me on the spot."
Yeah, that is pretty bad to do that on the Jumbotron. Yeah. I apologize.
But it worked out. It all worked out.
I wonder if I have the audio of that momentous.
That must be on video by then, right? We did video pretty.
Were we doing video? Yeah, I think.
I think so.
I'm trying to get it.
Because like Mary Jo said, one of her early episodes, she was literally upside down, and for some reason we couldn't fix it.
No, I had something wrong with my
I remember that. Yeah. I remember, so funny.
You guys were like, try this. And I'm like, no. Like, the whole show I was upside down, and I couldn't fix it. Sure. I guess we're just keeping it like this, okay?
Those were the days, my friends.
The other best of MJF was when the guy in my old building was on the roof and I looked out when we were doing the show.
Yeah, right.
And you thought he was killing, like, himself, I think.
He was dangling his legs over the edge looking down, and I'm like,
I don't remember what I said, but I'm positive it was something like, "The only thing I've ever seen outside my window is a squirrel."
I think you did say that.
It would have been something like that.
I think you did say that. Yeah. It turned out he was washing his windows outside and got locked out.
Yikes. You want to see video from this old show? This is.
Yeah, why not?
This is. You might be kind of spooked.
When we were young.
Yeah.
You
really look, both of you, and I'm sure I do too, looked kind of different.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can. Yep. Stop playing. I have problems on this Mac with playing video, unfortunately. But. Yeah, you looked you looked really different.
Yeah.
Look at you, Paul. What the heck? Who's that young guy?
Paul has hair. What the heck?
Who is that? Brown hair.
Brown hair. So did I. So.
and look at me. This is back in the cottage.
Yep.
Yep. Look at that. The four screen.
Wow. Yep. The old four screen setup. Skypeosaurus. Yeah.
Very nice.
There's Mary Jo Foley. Oh, and you still have that bookshelf.
I do. Yep. Same bookshelf behind me now with different things on it.
Yeah, different place, though, because you've moved.
Yeah.
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 Doesn't have a cat then.
Right.
I wish I could get this to play. I don't know. Oh, well. Sometime we'll add. You know what? Maybe the editors at the end will add Paul asking you. Proposing on the Jumbotron, as it were. All right. Sure. Enough of that. Let's get on with the show. On with the show. Episode 800. Windows Weekly.
I know.
Okay, dozers. Microsoft earnings. Was it a good quarter, Paul and Mary Jo?
Curious to see what she has to say.
Yeah. So, about that. You know what? I in my new job that starts next week at Directions on Microsoft... The analysts there always answer tough questions with two words. It depends. And I think I would say the same on earnings, because if you look at all the reports about yesterday's earnings, Q1 2023, some people are like, blockbuster quarter for Microsoft. Others are like, Microsoft and Google showing the way downhill. I'm like, okay, so can both things be true? I don't know, right? Like, their earnings were not terrible, but all... I always say this. All the analysts in Wall Street care about is one number, Azure. That is the only number they care about. Did they make the Azure number or didn't they? They did not. Okay. As soon as they saw that and they saw Amy giving guidance that it wouldn't be good next quarter either, the stock just dropped. Yeah,
hold on a second. So not good means 35-ish% growth. Like, that's crazy growth.
Right. It should have been like 38 or whatever.
The only asterisks I would give to this quarter, obviously there were certain businesses that were impacted more than others, and we'll get into that. But overall, I thought it was great given the hard financial times we live in, et cetera.
Right.
The issue, of course, is whether 1 year from now we're going to look back on this as the good old days, right? So yeah. Microsoft's still heading up. Google is still heading up, actually. And yeah. I'm sure Apple, Amazon, we'll see what happens. But yeah, this is a difficult time. And we just experienced an incredible boom time in big tech because of the pandemic. So that skews things a little bit. I'll just say any growth compared to a pandemic year, basically, is incredible given what's going on in the world today. And so I, in some ways, I kind of agree with the notion that it was a blockbuster quarter, asterisk, given the conditions we exist in today. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm even going to make a great case for Windows eventually, which did poorly. Yep. Because, well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. I don't want to ruin that point for later.
But all up, I feel like, I also feel like they did pretty well with the hand that they were given in terms of the economy, the exchange rate. You know, as Amy Hood, the CFO, brought up, the cost of electricity, which is really starting to impact how they run their data centers. So there's a lot of things, supply chain, blah, 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 right? But they're still selling, right? They're still selling a lot of software and services.
We should discuss the why, right? In other words, why is a company like Google, which I think did poorly, relatively speaking, compared to Microsoft, why are those companies so different in terms of how they did comparatively and what the future looks like? And I think it's because Microsoft is a much more diverse company now.
It is.
They have a lot of, I can't call them low margin, but they have a diverse business. I think it's just the best way to say it. And so things like hardware manufacturing doesn't impact them that much. They don't sell that much hardware, really. Mm-hmm. Most of their business is cloud services, which, yes, requires hardware, absolutely, of course, and electricity costs and et cetera, et cetera. But they have so many different ways to generate revenues. Google has one. They literally have one.
Yeah.
And then they have a couple small businesses.
The ad market was terrible, right? Even Microsoft, they had pretty good numbers in search and advertising for the quarter, but they said that market is just being killed right now by all the forces out there. And so if you're Google and like 85, 90% of your revenue's from that, you're in big trouble, right?
Right. I suspect that companies like Apple and Amazon will do pretty well because Apple has really diversified its business, not quite to the extent that Microsoft has, but dramatically different than, say, it was 4 or 5, 8 years ago, whatever. And then Amazon, of course, has the different types of businesses. And they're the backbone of the internet, basically, with AWS. So I suspect they'll have a downturn comparatively, but they're still humongous. We'll get there.
Was there anything that surprised you in earnings? Like when you saw it, you're like, oh man, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, there were a lot actually. Let me ask you what you think of this theory. Not really a theory, but this observation. So every quarter they release their financial statements. We pore over them. We write our stories, whatever. And then there's a post earnings conference call and they always reveal a lot more information in that call than is in the press release and the slides and all that. And a lot of interesting data came out of that. Not many hard numbers. We'll kind of get to that. That's typical these days. But as I was reading through this, I thought, this is good cop, bad cop. If you go back and reread it, that Satya Nadella, and they probably do this every quarter, but it was very pronounced this time because of the situation. Satya Nadella is like, everything's great. Everything's great. Everything's great. Here's Amy. This was down. This was down. This was down. This is going to be down next quarter too. This was down. You know, and it was a really interesting kind of transposition of the two looks at the same data, because there are different ways to look at things. You know, you can talk about it like Microsoft will say engagement is way up in Windows. Great. How are revenues? Oh, they're not doing that good. You know, so you know what matters more to the bottom line? What matters to the future of the company, the future of the product, et cetera, et cetera. But that wasn't surprising. It was just the first time I ever saw it so clearly. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Usually the a company like Microsoft CFO the past couple of years, I mean, she's giving a victory parade, right? I mean, Amy Hood has nothing but good news to talk about. So this is the first time in a while where it's been like, a lot of stuff is down or a lot of stuff didn't meet expectations. Yeah. And it was an interesting thing to compare how the two C-level executives kind of presented the company. So that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was
my biggest surprise were the questions from the Wall Street analysts, because all of us in the press, we're not allowed to ask questions on this call, right? Like, we can listen to it, like anybody can, any person can listen to it, but we're not allowed to submit questions. And it's always frustrating to us because we're like, ask about this. Come on.
All they care about is Azure. Azure.
But that tells you something. I mean, that
it does. It does tell you something, but I felt like they were a little more hard-hitting than they usually are, because if you listen to their usual questions, it's kind of like, hey,
great quarter, guys.
Like, great quarter, guys. And like, it's awesome how Great Office is doing. Could you give us more color on that? It's very light. But yesterday, they went in. They all wanted to know about Azure. Like, they were like, what is happening with Azure? Why is it down? Why is it going to be bad? More bad next quarter? Like, what's going on here? Come on.
So what did you think about their answer? Because I noted that too. And what did you think about their answer, if you remember it? I thought the answer was correct. It just as I'm, it, in fact, it informed my future discussion about Windows.
Well, I mean, I took away that they said, we're still signing a lot of really big multi-million dollar contracts that are lasting over courses of years, which makes it hard to really tell you guys exactly how much Azure is going to grow, right? Like, because they're variable, right? Like, we don't know when they're going to close and when the companies are going to take, you know, start consuming the stuff they're buying. So I feel
but
like
it's in the pipeline. That's pretty good.
It's in the pipe. It's in the pipeline. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. They had some big companies to reveal too, that were using their various Azure services, Wells Fargo, et cetera, et cetera.
So what were the analysts worried about? Why were they?
Because it used to be 70% growth. Then it was 60%. Yeah. Then eventually it was 40%. Now it's 35%. They're freaking out.
That's what's wrong with this country.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Also, nobody ever says the law of large numbers thing. I'm like, it's 30% on a much bigger base than it was 3 years ago.
This is
called numeracy.
Well, this is one of the problems with not giving us hard numbers on how much the revenues are for something like Azure. Yeah. But
that's right.
The thing I'm sure there were economists talking about this at the time, but in our little industry, you know, we're not financial analysts, but we cover the finances every quarter, and this is something we're kind of familiar with. To me, it was a gigantic red flag when the four of the biggest companies in the world routinely were citing extreme double-digit growth in many, many products and services. Like, it was crazy. And that is not normal. It's not sustainable. And it's going to lead to what we're about to roll into now, which is, you know, a period of, you know, lackluster growth or even losses. And it's almost cancerous in its name. You know, the pandemic was a hopefully once in a lifetime event or whatever, but it was a unique event for sure. It was an extreme event. And, you know, Microsoft has spent the past 20 years, maybe, trying to get on a more, at least 15 years, a more level growth pattern. You know, one of the things they did with Windows 7, remember, was even out the sales because they didn't want spikes, valleys, right? They don't want that uncertainty. But the entire point of Azure should be that it eventually gets to that point, but it is still spike, valley. And because people are still adopting it, they don't know what it's going to look like. It's still peaks and valleys. So unfortunately, the analysts do write for Wall Street. They represent Wall Street. They're representing shareholders. That's all they're going to ask about. And I wish the focus could be on something else.
Yeah, the focus is on the cloud because the cloud is becoming bigger and bigger. You know, the thing Microsoft calls the Microsoft Cloud. This quarter, it was more than half of total revenues, right? Like, so the cloud now is more than half of their business. So this is where the analysts are all looking for the future, right? They're like, this is what's growing. And if you look in the more personal computing segment, which is Windows, search and news, and Xbox and gaming, that's what's not growing, right?
Well, it's right.
I mean, not that's a blanket statement.
It's either growing much more slowly or is not growing. Yeah.
Right. So this is why all eyes are on the cloud and Azure and why they're so obsessed with it.
It's kind of like legacy business versus new business. Even though there are new hardware devices, there are new versions of Windows, there are new whatever. I mean, obviously there's new there, but like I said, Microsoft was correct to pivot on the cloud. I think this 50+% revenue thing proves that, but I think we all saw this coming. We've been building to this day. the little chilling remark at the end of the call, Amy Hood did a little outro and she said something. It was very
same thing as me.
Well, it was very similar to what Google CEO Sundar Pichai had said a quarter ago, which was we need to focus on things that are going to grow. And, you know, it's more critical than ever to invest in growth markets, cloud security teams, Dynamics, LinkedIn.
Are they being pushed to that by the stock market, though? I mean, gosh, look at the reflect, you know, how this analyst responded.
It's yes, because, right. So, right. The difference here is between revenues and growth.
Right.
And if you're just looking at revenues, that list of products would be very different. But when you're looking at growth, because that's what drives the stock market, that's what drives the stock price, that was what drives the value of your company, you have to look at growth. And this is the whole problem with our entire world right
We're
now.
Totally quarterly focused, you know?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You have to be. I mean, they're a public company.
She didn't mention Windows. She did not mention Windows.
That was, of course not.
Wow.
Well, so, but this is, okay. I got to, this freaks me out. We would have talked about this possibly a year ago this week or some other quarter last year, whatever it was. But there was a moment a year or two ago where Amy Hood was the one who said it, but Microsoft collectively as a company suddenly realized, they said publicly, that the PC is important again. And we're going to start putting more resources into it. We care about it again. That was an astonishing statement from the company that drives this multi-billion dollar industry that's all built around Windows, selling computers and all the software and services that run on top of it. It was an incredibly stupid thing to say, I thought. And now that things are inevitably going down again, because of course they are. And for a little while, we can say, well, they're still at higher than pre-pandemic levels. You know, that's good, I guess.
Yeah.
But because of the year-over-year or year-over-two-year comparable, it doesn't look so hot because the pandemic was incredible for PC sales. Sorry, the pandemic was terrible. Now it's like we're all, you know, now we're souring on the PC again. That what I don't want to hear, I don't think they'll come out and say it because they just ignore things that do poorly for the most part.
Yeah.
But you could almost, I mean, you could almost imagine her saying, well, you know, maybe the PC isn't that sustainable growth engine we thought it was. It was just a little blip on the horizon because of what happened with the pandemic.
Yeah.
Which those two extremes are both wrong. The PC is an incredible market that has existed for a long time, will continue to exist for a long time, and still drives a lot of the growth that you see in Microsoft 365, which is a huge component of their earnings, and all the software and services that they offer. All the ad stuff, the search and all that, all requires Windows or it doesn't work. I don't know why they can't just acknowledge how important that is.
So this is kind of interesting. We haven't talked about this yet, but right before they did earnings a month ago, they quietly made some adjustments to where things go in these buckets that they report.
And
Windows 365, which you just mentioned, used to be in Windows Commercial. They moved it to Azure. They moved it to Azure. Right. Because it runs on Azure Virtual Desktop. They moved GitHub Cloud.
Well, hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt. Really, because Azure needs that boost. Because there's growth coming through Windows 365. Right. Revenue-wise, and they want that applied to Azure, the thing everyone is looking at, not at Windows, the thing no one cares about.
Right, and they also moved...
And that's the real reason.
Yep. GitHub Cloud revenues moved to Azure also.
Right. And GitHub is in their productivity and online services business. Yeah.
Right. So you could say, okay, you know, GitHub does... Like, most of GitHub now does run on Azure, so, okay, maybe, right? You could call that part of Azure services, right?
Yeah. I'm not being cynical here. I'm not blaming Microsoft. We've literally just explained the problem. They have to play the game. They have to, right? Yeah. They will materially harm their revenue, their worth as a company if they don't do this, because Azure will grow more slowly otherwise. And the whole company will take a hit, as will every single shareholder, as will the U.S. economy, right? This is the terribleness of the system. It's not Microsoft's fault.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because all of these things, like we said at the start, you can make numbers say whatever you want. Like if they wanted to pad Windows, they'd put more thing into Windows, right? And they'd be like, look at Windows. Windows is growing,
Well, actually, they did put more things into that part of the business. Right. We'll get to that.
Oh, yeah. So, they did a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. It was a one-time gain, we'll call it.
It was. Yeah. Maybe a gain. We'll see.
Well, a revenue gain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so are there any other like talking points? What else did you want to talk about?
Yeah. So the biggest thing to me that you asked earlier about like surprising or shocking or whatever.
Yeah.
The biggest thing to me, and this really stood out, was somebody asked them in the Q&A about ads. This has been a thing for me, as you know. In fact, one of the things we'll talk about is today or this week or whatever is the anniversary of Windows 8. Windows 8 is the first version of Windows that came with ads built into the operating system. And I wrote an article and I said, this is a slippery slope. You don't put ads into an operating system unless you intend to put more ads into the operating system. And then more, and then more, and then more. It doesn't, you don't do more and then do less. You're always going to do more. It's always going to get worse. You know, this week alone, I highlighted a couple of examples where advertising in Windows in one case and Teams in another has just gotten worse. It's really bad. If you look at search highlights today, let me see if I still have it. Yeah. Search highlights is one of those things in Windows where I described it as a distraction. It was a kind of a search results thing that was like based on what happened today in history. If you look at it today, it's an ad for Microsoft Edge. And that's the slippery slope in action. So I've been kind of on this topic for a long, well, for 10 years. And anyway, somebody asked him, you know, what's the deal? Satya Nadella said point blank, we have this installed base. How do we take advantage of it? He didn't say this part, but remember, they're not charging for Windows upgrades anymore like they used to, right? No one's buying Windows. So people update their PCs or replace their PCs much less frequently than they used to. So that money is not what it was, so to speak, but they do have $1 billion to $1.5 billion, whatever, people out there. How do we milk them for more money? We do it with ads. And they talk about the way he's described it is so terrible because he's so robotic, but our owned and operated inventory, whether it is Bing or search or the feed, those are the things where you see growth because we put them in front of people in Windows. It's high leverage. It's the top of the install base that's now structurally changed, which, by the way, I disagree with, but in terms of growth. In other words, we're milking our install base with ads. It works. Search and news advertising revenue was up 16% thanks to record daily usage of Edge, Start, and Bing, all driven by Windows.
That's very modern. Thinking of Windows as your marketing tool.
Yeah,
it's like my son with his TikTok, you know? I mean, it's Mary Jo with his podcast. It's a way of promoting what you're doing, the real moneymaker.
I need a second. All right, so Apple.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Apple is doing the same thing, not that we care too much about Apple, but Apple is putting more ads into the store. You know, they're going to put more ads in front of people. It probably won't be as obnoxious as what Microsoft does.
Wait a minute. Right? Hold my beer.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, what? I haven't seen it, maybe because I'm in California, but already all the ads are for gambling apps.
Yep.
Have you seen ads? I haven't seen it yet.
Ads where?
In the App Store. So what they've added is App Store.
Oh, the Apple
ads.
App Store.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And now I'm not seeing it. But I'm not seeing it because I think probably it's, you know, we're still haven't voted to approve. Gambling, but so you see that, or I just saw we saw the story. I guess
I've never seen. I've just seen a story about it happening. I haven't looked.
So that's how bad it can be, right?
Well, look, your installed base is an asset. I mean,
yes.
How do you take advantage of it?
It's
not enough to sell something someone once. You know, Microsoft is moving to the subscription model. Windows is not on a subscription model. So how do we get money out of those guys? They tried honest ways first, right? Honest ways, upsell to Microsoft 365, sell them OneDrive additional storage, you know, that kind of stuff. Turns out there are 1.5 billion people using Windows. There are only 60 million people paying for Office 365 consumer, Microsoft 365 consumer. There are probably single digit millions paying for OneDrive additional storage. Okay. So we have this 1.4 something billion. Now, how do we monetize them? Ads is one of those ways. It's just the sad reality. And, like I said, we're not paying for Windows. I personally would prefer to pay for Windows and not have those ads. For now, you can remove a lot of the things that I consider ads from Windows. It is only a matter of time. It is the nature of the slippery slope I keep talking about that will no longer be possible through normal means in the UI. I'm sure we'll always figure out ways. But anywho, that to me was an astonishing acknowledgement of something that some people are going to think is obvious. But to my knowledge, him or anyone else at Microsoft has never spoken like that. Certainly not in a financial call like that. And I thought that was I thought that was, that to me was the single most incredible thing.
Yeah. I've never heard them say it. Like, I always kind of understood that that was what they were thinking, but I never heard them blatantly state
it.
Like,
it sounds terrible when you spell it out. It's obvious, right? It is obvious. We hate to admit it. And the reason it's obvious is, like I just said, I would love to pay for Windows. If they offered that, 60 million people would sign up. You know, like, well, no one's going to do it.
You asked Chris Kapp this. Remember this? Mm-hmm. You asked Chris Capizella, right? And you're like, why can't we just have a thing where if you don't want ads, you just pay.
That's right.
Right? And he said, because that would admit that the ads are bad and that people
That's exactly right. That's right. You know what, though? Listen, this network we're on has an ad-free premium program. My website does. And it's not a bad thing to admit that ads are bad. Ads are a kind of a necessary evil. And offering one of your most loyal customers a way to get around something bad and have a better experience is not a bad thing. That's a premium experience. I think there's ways you can do that. And
it's a slippery slope. Be careful, because remember, local television stations, you know, what happens is you've done a double dip. So local television stations used to be entirely ad supported. Then they realized they could make money by charging people to be on cable.
Yeah.
And so now they do both. In fact, Hulu, I mean, so many places get ads and charge you. Be careful what you ask for.
I know. By the way, exactly right. That's the newspaper model. I've been complaining about that for years as well. I got to just redo the screen. This is, if I can find it. I'm in the wrong thing. I'm in the wrong place. So in Windows 11,
for years, but that's
okay. I know. In Windows 11, no, not just Windows 11, any version of Windows where Microsoft Edge exists.
Yeah.
There is this series of screens you go through when you set it up. And, you know, it's like, hey, welcome to Edge. You know, we can keep your stuff in sync. Nice. We can take your stuff from Chrome and sync it into Edge. Nice. And then there's a third screen that says, let's make the web work for you. I'm like, okay, everything's checked by default. And what it says is, let Microsoft use your browsing activity to include history, favorites, usage, and other browsing data to personalize Microsoft Edge and Microsoft services like search, shopping, news, and ads. You can't choose which of those to do. Actually, that's not true. I think this is a subscreen where you can. But every one of these, if you say yes to any of this, you have just given Microsoft permission to track you on the web and violate your privacy. That's what that screen is. It should be called, let's make the web work for Microsoft. All it is. The problem with this thing is, if you look through the list, what you see is search, shopping, and news, and then ads. But everyone agrees ads are terrible. But search, shopping, and news, it's what it sounds like is, if I don't check the box and say, well, the box is checked. If I uncheck the box, does that mean I don't get search, shopping, and news in Edge? That's what it looks like. And that's not what it is. You get all of those things without, you can turn this off. And my advice in the book and what I'll say now is uncheck that thing. And then if you want to uncheck it later, you have to go to the Microsoft privacy dashboard on the Microsoft account website and turn it off. Because by default, Edge, when you go through Edge out of box experience, you have agreed to let Microsoft track you everywhere you go on the internet for purposes of advertising. That's what that is.
It's when you see those messages that say, would you like your ads customized so they're more personal for
you? Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. No, that's stupid. Yeah. Don't ever do that. Yep. Oh, I want to see ads for salad spinners and other things I don't care about. And then I want to turn them off with an ad blocker. But you definitely don't want personalized ads because you're giving permission for them to track what you're doing.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, that's not earnings related, but it just.
But yeah, it is
semi-related.
Kind of, it is. Yeah. I think it is. Yeah.
I mean, this is where, because if you're Microsoft, you've got Windows, you see the PC market is tanking. You see, you know, like.
This is good. This is good. Listen, Paul, this is good. You see the PC market is tanking.
I was going to say, I take exception to that term, but the PC market is what I just described Azure's. It's peaks and valleys, right? The cycle has gotten longer.
Down 30%. Or something.
Yeah, right, but it's going to come back. I mean, people have to buy computers, don't they?
Maybe.
Yes.
No. So, what if they buy like netbooks and computers and they?
Well, one of the reasons they might do that is because they've made Windows more terrible with ads.
Right.
You know, these are all kind of cause and effect things. The big question in the PC market is unchanged because of the pandemic. The question has always been, where does it plateau? Right. The PC market will always be important. it's never going to be as big as smartphones. It can't be. Right? It's just the nature of that market, right? There will be other device types that sell more than it. However, most of us need a PC to get work done. That doesn't change. They get upgraded on whatever the schedule is. That has changed. Yeah. And by the way, you can monetize that market in different ways, not just by ads. You know, Microsoft 365, which is a huge component of Microsoft's earnings, most of those people, I don't know. Microsoft has never said they should. I bet 90-something percent of them all do that on PCs.
Yeah,
it's got to be some huge number. So the install base there is really helping out a core part of their business and also part of their cloud business. Yeah. It's important. It doesn't matter if PC sales are down 16% this year or whatever it is. I mean, it does matter, but that's not the whole story.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Hey, you know what I'd like to do right now?
I'm going to guess. Can I guess?
Yeah.
I guess?
Yeah.
Are you going to do an ad?
Yeah. Good job.
16 years. I got it.
Finally figured this out.
Very clever.
That's what this show is.
Very clever. Our show today, brand new sponsor, actually. We want to welcome NordLayer to the network. NordLayer, if you want to secure your business network, you need NordLayer. NordLayer safeguards your company's network and data with a surge of ransomware attacks, and it's only getting worse. And now your employees are working remotely. They're hybrid. This is your nightmare scenario. They work at home on their laptop and then bring it in and connect to the company network. Business networks are more vulnerable than ever. NordLayer secures and protects remote workforces as well as business data. It can even help you ensure security compliance. With NordLayer, it's easy to start. It takes less than 10 minutes to onboard your entire business on a secure network. Imagine that. If 10 minutes from now, your whole business is on a secure network, you'd be, well, yeah, right? Well, you could do it right now before this ad is over. You can easily add new members. You can create teams and private gateways. You can even do things like IP allow listing, you know, whitelist IPs. Say, you know, only these guys. Site-to-site connection. You could do network segmentation. That's very helpful, right? Just not just for security, for performance. You could set up secure network access. I want you to try it right now. In fact, I'm going to get you 1 month free if you go to nordlayer.com/twit. NordLayer, nordlayer.com/twit. It's completely hardware free. It's compatible with all major operating systems. You can implement security features across all teams. Things like two-factor authentication, single sign-on. You can use biometrics, threat block, smart remote access. And NordLayer scales. It's easy to scale as you choose a plan that meets your business requirements today and then fits with your rate of growth tomorrow. You'll have everything centrally in one place where you could check the server usage, monitor connections to your gateways, view the activity log. One NordLayer user said, quote, we were looking for an easy way to securely connect our remote workforce to our infrastructure, and this is it. Awesomely quick, friendly, and efficient support. It got us up and running in no time. 10 minutes. That's all. Another said, simple to install and operate. No funny business, and so fast our teams don't notice they're using it. Look, at most modern businesses are already adopting network solutions like SASE, Zero Trust, Hybrid Work Security. NordLayer has that, all that, and more. Don't leave your business vulnerable. Try NordLayer today. Join over 6,000-plus fully protected organizations. This is actually a great way to do this. It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month, so now's the time to safeguard your company with NordLayer. NordLayer, NordLayer. If you want to secure your business network, go to nordlayer.com/twit. Get your first month free when you buy an annual subscription. NordLayer, we thank them so much for joining the Windows Weekly family. And I encourage you to support Windows Weekly by going to that address, nordlayer.com/twit. Remember to add that part, /twit, for your free month. Okay, on with the earnings learnings.
Yeah. There's a lot more.
I know.
There's a lot more.
I know.
So, Mary Jo, is there anything else that stood out for you in the results?
No.
The call?
I was very focused on the Azure stuff and you know, what they said around that.
As is Microsoft, apparently.
This is the world, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I just was looking at kind of how they were trying to explain what was going on with Azure. And, you know, like we said, they talked about higher energy costs in the data center. Mm-hmm. They talked about supply chain and foreign exchange rates, you know, more than, I think almost half of Microsoft business all up comes from overseas. So if you have foreign exchange rates that are unfavorable, that impacts the company hugely, which they said during the call. There was nothing product-wise or strategy-wise that I felt like they shared that was interesting on this. It was more just like, here's what's going on. I'll take that back. One last thing was they hinted pretty strongly there could be more layoffs. I felt like that. Ooh. They kept talking about, we need to control our headcount. Like, we really grew our headcount a lot last year. Now we got to move some people around and figure out where they're going to be prioritized and working on the highest priority things for us. So I'm like, are they signaling more layoffs? I don't know. Maybe.
There was that warning at the end of the call. And I thought that sounded very much like what the Google CEO has been talking about all summer.
Yeah. Yep.
Which was focus, focus, focus. And then doing things like canceling the Pixelbook, canceling Stadia. And it kind of makes you wonder if in addition to layoffs that there might be cuts
in certain
places. I don't know. I don't have any, ideas there.
I don't have any inside info on that at all. Yeah. At the end, Amy was really playing up like, we know we need to do more with less. Like, we're telling our customers they do too. And like, we have to figure out what are the top priorities, put our people there, focus them on those things, because they did add a lot of people through Nuance. Like, they bought Nuance, they bought Xandr. Yep. They have all these acquisitions. Now they get all
they're
these
about to buy
thousands of
Activision.
People.
Right? What about Activision?
Right?
And that happens.
I know. They did say on the call, they still think Activision will close by the end of the fiscal. So that'll be June by next year.
They also said the guidance they're giving does not assume that. It has nothing to, that's cut out of it. It'd be interesting to see how that changes things if it happens.
Yeah, it would be.
So Mary Jo and I talked about this a little bit before we started the show, but, maybe Mary Jo remembers, but at some point, was it last year, they gave the last number for the number of Teams users, and then they've stopped talking about that.
Yeah.
So I think this was Nadella, most likely. Yeah. So in his intro, we talked about how Microsoft 365 Teams, and I think he said Dynamics or some other product line, we're all kind of part of the same thing, and we're big and, blah, blah, blah. And then he gave a bunch of incredible soft numbers around Teams, which I just thought was an incredible, string of factoids. It is used by hundreds of millions of people. Okay. Fair enough.
We know that.
De facto standard. Yep. De facto standard for collaboration. Yep. Absolutely. This is crazy. We are retaining users we've gained and are seeing increased engagement too. Okay. Users interact with Teams 1500 times per month on average. I don't believe there's ever been a number like that. So that can't be compared to anything. The average commercial user spends more time in Teams chat than they do in email. Okay. I don't know how
just
they know that.
Daily.
I guess.
It wasn't definitive though, right? Like, it felt like it was just kind of like a throwaway thing. Like, not all the time, just sometimes, right?
Yeah. You're right. Right. And then the number of users who use four or more features within Teams increased over 20% year over year. What the heck is that?
Don't mean anything. Yeah.
Numbers that mean literally nothing. If you were to put this under a category, I think almost every single one of these is engagement. I think that's what that is. Yeah. I think every one of those qualifies for that term.
Yeah. Sure.
But of course, what we're looking for is, but how many, right? So whatever the last number was.
You add.
So is the number, in other words, if the last number they gave a year and a half ago was 270 million, if that was the figure, I don't remember. And now we have 275 million. Yeah, no, it's gone up, but the big thing is engagement, I guess. And that's what they talk about with Windows. By the way, that's what they talk about with Xbox. Yeah. It's probably what they talk about. Well, they don't talk about it, interestingly, in Microsoft 365, but with all the ads I'm seeing, I wouldn't be surprised if it moves in that direction at some point, too.
Yeah, the last number we had was 270 million monthly active users.
Look at me remembering a number.
January 2022. That was the last time they gave us.
Oh, that was sooner. Okay. That was more recent than I thought. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
But still, it's a year ago, right?
Almost. Yeah. So, yep.
Yeah.
So that was,
the other,
that might be.
The, The other weird number they did was E5. Like, I'm obsessed with this. Like, how many people are running the E5 SKU, which is the most expensive SKU in Microsoft 365? And so I asked them this question. I'm like, how many people do you have? Last quarter, you said E5 was 12% of the mix of Microsoft 365, which I think is really low.
Say it again. Sorry, what was the number?
12% of the total Microsoft 365 mix was E5. That's what they said last quarter. Okay.
Interesting. Okay. I have something to counter that with when you're done. Okay.
So 12%. This quarter, they said E5 is more than half of the $10 million plus Microsoft 365 bookings. So not all of them, only the ones that are 10 million and over. So I'm like, so this number means nothing. You can't compare it to last time, right?
Because exactly. That's exactly what I was. Yep.
Number. Well,
what they've sort of shown you here is the most lucrative part.
Yeah.
Of one of the more lucrative parts of Microsoft,
exactly.
Right? It's the, if it is 12%, it's the most important 12% to us because they deliver way more revenues than the goons like me who pay for, the family version or whatever, E5 came up a bunch.
It did. Because this is what another thing that Wall Street is very focused on. They want to know, is Microsoft maxing out what they can do with Microsoft 365, right? So what they mean is, are you selling the most expensive SKU to the most number of people? And they want to see more people on E5, right? Like, that's the thing they would consider a positive. But instead, Microsoft last year was like messing around with what's in which SKUs and E3. Mm. They even admitted on the call, like, we moved some more stuff into E3, but we don't think we did a good job landing E3. So there's still a lot of people on E3. They've gotten a lot of people off E1, but they went to E3. They didn't go to E5, right? And then you get other people asking all the time, what about E7? I'm like, there is no E7. They've only got 12% of people on E5.
It's just like BMWs. There used to be a 3 Series and a 5. Then it was a 7.
I know.
Then it was an 8 and a 6.
I don't
6,
think we're anywhere near an E7. My prediction. But
Teams Premium speaks to the same.
It does.
The same thing,
Teams
right?
Premium, right? Teams Premium is the way they get around this. So if we can't get people to get on this really expensive SKU, what if we can sell them a bunch of add-ons, like $10 per user per month, and that'll add into what they already are paying?
Yeah, what will people buy, or what will customers or companies buy?
But these soft numbers, this is why I pay less and less attention to earnings, because I'm like, they give you like
it's
percentage
brutal.
Of some number you don't know. Whatever.
Yep. So I want to make sure we cover the more personal computing stuff because this is obviously where my heart is.
Near and dear to your heart.
Yeah.
It's the smallest PC business. Market. Let's go.
Smallest business in Microsoft. So Intelligent Cloud, which is Azure, grew by double digits. Business productivity, whatever it's called, online services or business and productivity and business processes. 9% growth. Not bad.
Yeah, pretty good.
More personal computing, slight year-over-year decrease in revenues. It actually went down overall. The problems here were Windows and Surface, both of which had double-digit drop-offs.
Not more than the PC market in general, right?
Probably not. No, I would imagine
less than the PC
bellwether.
Market. Less than the PC market.
So that's
market.
A good
Well,
sign
that's,
though.
That's, well, right. not necessarily. They sell ahead, right? So PC makers are buying licenses for future sales. But the problem for the PC, Mary Jo mentioned a 30% figure. That's for the current quarter. So part of the outlook is they actually think the market's going to fall even harder in the current quarter. And this is, the current
30%.
Quarter.
30%. High 30%.
Exactly. That's a scary thing. So let me see if I can find this. The number for
I'm just going to say
maker sales.
I know I'm a lame duck here, but Microsoft Cloud Weekly has a nice ring to it instead of Windows Weekly.
Okay. So I feel like someone who's giving up on the show,
I'm helping you.
Azure
Weekly. Nice.
Listen, if I was interested in Teams, it would be something you could talk about forever and never run out of topics.
Teams Weekly. You got it.
Yeah, that's the problem is that neither Paul nor I
Yeah, I mean, we both just glaze over. Can I play games in it yet? I mean, is that happening?
I don't know what we're going
to do. Okay, Xbox Weekly. No, it kind of is a joke now. But
yeah, no, we don't want
to
do that.
No, because that would that would require really paying attention to individual games, and I think that gets kind of tedious.
Yeah.
So anyway, but revenues from PC makers were down 15% in the quarter for Microsoft, right? Overall, Windows revenues declined 20%. Of course, you know, you got to do the lemonade moment thing where, you know, what's the good news? Well, seeing the larger commercial deployments of Windows 11 now, finally a year later, and they cited Accenture. I don't know if you know what this company does, but they help other companies deploy Windows. So it took them a year to do it. And that's your good news. So that's kind of interesting.
What? They still didn't give you the Windows 11 number. If it was really good, they never will. Give us a Windows 11 number.
Because it's not really good. It's not really good.
Right.
Xbox had a surprisingly good quarter. And by good, I mean console sales were up. Mm-hmm. Game Pass subscriptions were up 159%. Those are pandemic numbers, by the way. Xbox hardware revenues were up 13%. Nearly half of the people who have bought the Xbox Series S this past year, new to Xbox. This is the type of thing Apple usually talks about. You know, most of the people who bought the iPhone this quarter were new to the iPhone, right? They came from Android. That's a nice little competitive point. I'm actually not sure I would have thrown that out given what's going on with Sony right now. But anyway, that happened. Content and services were down 3%. You know, whatever. But they had a hard number for Game Pass. I'm sorry, for cloud gaming. So cloud gaming is the game streaming service. This is only available to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is the most expensive version of the subscription, $14.99 a month. It has now been used by over 20 million people, up 2x since the last time they spoke about this, which was April when it was 10 million people. Now, used by doesn't mean monthly active user, right? It means I have this subscription, I'm paying for it, I gave it a shot.
Yeah.
They might not be, you know, ongoing, you know, we don't know, but this is the future for this platform for sure. So it was interesting to get anything going there. I can't remember if I mentioned this, you know, the devices part of this business was up 2%, which sounds pretty good because that's Surface, except it's not Surface. Surface was declined by low double digits. So probably 10 to 12%. That's not good. The growth there was due to the impact of a large HoloLens deal. Wink, wink.
Oh.
You know, in other words, a one-time hit from the Army.
Right. Oh, man. Really? Wow. Yeah.
Yep. That's it.
Oh,
They dumped the HoloLens into more personal computing alongside Surface.
Oh, yep. Wow.
Yep.
So.
But I think the Army officially made it look better. I didn't know the Army had.
Well, you know, they paid the bill, right? In other words, we got like a one-time. Maybe a two-time. I don't know. I don't know how it works. But this isn't. This doesn't represent profits, right? This is revenue. So they got money in. They applied it to this part of the business. If they hadn't, you would have seen a number that was 10 to 12, 14, well, actually maybe higher, 16%, whatever. We have no way of knowing. I'm making up numbers here. I don't know what the number is, but it would have been a higher number. The number for Surface like that for Windows is going to be bad this current quarter as well. Mm. Also double digits. And I think they said that... I can't find it. The gaming business, which is Xbox, will also decline in the current quarter, which is interesting because this is the holiday quarter. Right.
Right. But I think I asked them a little bit about gaming and they said, you know, during the pandemic, everybody was gaming. Right. Like, and now fewer people are gaming as more people are going back to the office and, you know, life is somewhat returning to normal in quotes.
Yep. Yeah. So. I got to say, I said this up front. I don't see what's happening with Windows as bad. And the reason I don't is because it's, you know, cyclical. There are ups and downs. Those ups and downs are further apart than they used to be. We just came out of a pandemic, so we have really bad comparables. And we're going to for a couple of years now. The question I have is where the plateau occurs. Do we go back to pre-pandemic levels? Mm-hmm. Are we always going to be a little bit above them, which would be ideal, obviously? Does this mean that Microsoft should release a new version of Windows called Windows 12 in a couple of years to do that little artificial boost thing, give PC makers something to sell? I think it was tough on PC makers to maintain any momentum when all they had to sell on their computers was the same version of the operating system, even though we know there were differences. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing to market.
True.
So that was a problem. But I think the big thing about Windows is what I said earlier, is that you have to take into account the usage that it drives across the spectrum. And some of that usage is subscription service based, where you're getting money every month because people are using Microsoft 365 primarily. Maybe, you know, OneDrive additional storage, that's going to be low number. And then sadly, ads, of course. So you're taking advantage of a large user base while you're waiting for them to upgrade their PC.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's it's a fairly healthy business for Microsoft. It's not a great business for PC makers, frankly. I think a lot of those guys are very low margin, which is why you see so much crapware, speaking of ads, on those machines. But for Microsoft, Windows, I think it's healthy. And given what's going on in the world, we have to keep saying that. Down 15% sounds bad, but the world is circling the drain. And last year, they were doing a Congo line with the pandemic, you know? So
Wow.
Circling the drain seems a little strong, Paul.
All right, it's I'm exaggerating that point. But, okay.
No, I think your point is dead on. And they would never come out this bold, but they almost did with what Satya said. Windows, right. The way they're thinking about Windows going forward is a delivery vehicle for ads.
Yeah.
Like if you say to them, how are you going to make money with Windows going forward?
Yep.
It's by delivering ads.
This is tough because one of the big concerns I would say in the user base over the past several years, as Microsoft has transitioned to a cloud company, was when does this happen to Windows? And you hear things like Microsoft 365, or more important, Windows 365. And you think, here it comes. They're going to start charging me every month to use this damn thing, and this is going to be the end of the world. And everyone didn't want that. But now you see the alternative, which is, oh, no, don't worry. You don't have to pay for Windows. You're just going to pay for it with your sanity, you know, with these ads that are going to pop up everywhere. And
you're making a great point, and you're making me think of something. So, you know, what came out at Ignite was that new Windows 365 app that you can pin to your taskbar or your start menus that you can like more easily switch back and forth with Windows and Windows in the cloud. Right.
Right.
But they've already said this app is going to be built into Windows 11. So what if they say your choice is going to be you get Windows locally with ads or you use Windows in the cloud with no ads?
You know what? I happily accept that deal with the devil right there.
It might be, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Interesting. Or I guess you could also, I mean, I don't think any of this makes sense. I mean, you could do a thing where you say, well, we're going to have these premium features. They'll be part of a Windows 365 subscription. You can optionally offload them onto the local machine. So they'll be local. You know, it's fine. But in order to get those, maybe you have to pay a subscription, something like that. So,
Yeah, sure. Maybe.
Sure.
I'm digging around on that. I'm like really looking into Windows 365. I asked them on the earnings.
I'm really curious.
I'm like, I want numbers on Windows 365. And they're like, it's too early. I'm like, I want to hear how it's going. Curious.
I bet it's not going great, but I think part of it is integration issues. And I think one of the more interesting things.
It's expensive.
Right. Oh, it's super expensive. That's right. Yeah. It's like $20 a month to start, I think. And, you know, it's obviously for businesses, not for individuals right now. But the notion of running, I keep coming back to this idea of running an app remotely from the cloud, which is way more interesting to me than running over a Windows desktop in a window or whatever. I mean, I know you can put it full screen, but I don't want to blast a whole desktop across the internet. I just want to get that one app that my workplace requires me to have. You get into a situation where you have your bring your own PC thing. You've got a computer you bought as an individual. It's got all your personal stuff on it. You can bring down an app from work that's your line of business app, whatever it is, the thing you need to get your job done. They don't get to impact your computer. You still get to work. I feel like this is the future. You know, if you sign into Teams today, for example, and some other apps, one of the questions you'll get is, do you want us to manage your entire computer or just manage this app? And if you're an individual on your own computer, you should always choose just the app because the computer remains your own and then your workplace can control what happens in the app. So I think this is, I don't know if this is an explicit thing that they're doing down the road, but it's something they used to do with on-prem data centers. And I feel like it's a natural for the cloud.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the money they make in that will go into Azure because that's all anyone cares about. You know?
I know. Yeah.
Okay. So is that most of it?
I think we got it. Oh, GitHub.
That's most
of it.
We didn't
talk about GitHub.
GitHub is an amazing story, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you should talk about that because they called and talked to you about it.
They told me.
Yeah,
and so the funny thing about that is they never explained. They used the term ARR. Yeah. And so I just, I'm like, okay, whatever. And then afterwards I looked it up and it stands
for. I did too.
Annual,
I'm like, what does that mean?
Because they never explained it, right? Because this has become such a financial.
It's the new term that everybody uses. Yeah.
Annual recurring revenue.
Yeah.
Right. So GitHub is not what I would call a $1 billion business, but it has surpassed $1 billion in annual recurring revenue for
the
first time ever.
That sounds like $1 billion business to me. That's every year, Paul.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Every year, $1 billion.
All right. Okay.
Every year.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
How much did they pay for GitHub?
It wasn't that much. It was Okay. Now you're going to make me look it up.
I mean, it may be
4 years ago. Yeah. 4 years ago.
I thought it was like 4-ish billion.
So that's pretty good. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, normally you pay, 8 to 10 times EBITDA? I don't know what EBITDA is, but if ARR is
7.5 billion.
So that's about right.
GitHub had never publicly released any financial information. So this is, and Microsoft hasn't either for them, right? So I think this is the first time we've ever gotten any insight into what's going on with this company.
A remarkable number, frankly.
Yeah, but the thing that's interesting to me about this the most is that most of this growth, and this is growth in users as well as just in revenue or in revenue as well, has come since the Microsoft acquisition. Mm-hmm. And you know, we know because we're in this industry, there was a lot of pushback when Microsoft bought GitHub because, you know, a lot of open source people were like, "Oh, I don't know if we can trust these guys." And I argued, I'm sure we all did at the time, actually Microsoft will be a good steward of this. I mean, this is the type of thing that they do well. There are a lot of terms in here. I had to look up CICD, continuous integration, continuous delivery.
Yes. Right? Big developer thing. Yeah.
Yep.
DevOps.
DevOps, baby.
So over 90 million people use GitHub now, up from $28 million users at the time of the acquisition.
Say that again. To what? 98?
No, 28 to 90.
90.
Right. So,
wow.
Yep. 90 million. GitHub had a public goal to reach 100 million users by 2025. They're obviously going to have no problem doing that. They'll do that easy. They've been able to leverage Microsoft's scale to grow more quickly, right? That makes sense. It's running on Azure now. Blah, blah, blah. So there, yeah. So CICD. What was that little data point I was looking for? I can't see it, but there were a lot of major companies now using GitHub, like Toyota North America, you know, Philips, Ford, Twilio, Daimler, State of California. Autodesk,
the interesting,
Stripe,
you know. A couple of interesting things I think of. First of all, remember when they bought it, how everybody said, that's it. I'm not gonna have anything to do with it. I'm going to GitLab. That didn't happen. In fact, quite the opposite. I imagine a lot of those corporate users are brand new users. And remember
that
you can use GitHub for free.
Yeah.
In fact, it's pretty good for free. They give you a lot for free.
I use it for those programming projects I did. I used them for the book.
Yeah,
the two books actually.
They
hosted
will host
GitHub.
Your website for free.
Yeah,
free.
Right.
So
that's how they get you, though, Leo.
That is how they get you. Because I had a free account for a long time, but you know it's cheap. I think $5 a month or something. It's not expensive.
Right.
But you know what? That's the definition of a good service, right? You use the free version. You find such value in it. You hit the point where it's like, okay, you have to pay for some reason, but you look at what you get for paying and you say, yeah, you know,
it's worth it.
This is a no brainer. This is what, to me, this is what Microsoft 365 is for most people. Although
I use it for backup.
10 million individuals.
There's so many things you can do with it.
Yeah.
I wonder what their, they talk about what their expenses are. I mean, cause this is revenue. But,
no,
you know,
no, they'll never do that.
No. Yeah. And they folded it into Azure.
It's part of Azure.
Of course they folded. Of course they did. That's right. Azure is like the black hole that's just going to suck in everything that makes money at Microsoft. Like,
you know what? We get to grow the Azure number. Let's put GitHub over there. Yeah. Awesome.
Yep.
You know, what's interesting is that Git was originally created by Linus Torvalds for Linux.
That's right. Yeah. As a version control system, right?
Yeah. And of Linus and a bunch of others, I'm sure. But
yeah.
He doesn't get royalties for this because he open sources it.
Yeah.
Right.
So. I'm sure Linus is doing fine.
Yeah, but he makes it up in volume.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how that works.
Amazing. What a story.
Yep.
That was the right acquisition. You can't say that for LinkedIn. You can't say that.
Every quarter, I swear to God, they'll say productivity, bit, whatever money. The reason we had growth was because of Office and LinkedIn. You're like, no, LinkedIn. That's not true. I mean, LinkedIn is growing.
I've asked so many. No, I've asked so many times, is LinkedIn profitable? And they're like, we don't really have anything to say on that. I'm like, oh, okay.
The LinkedIn stuff is nuts. There was a big thing. I did a thing on LinkedIn. Let me see if I can find this. Yeah. This is like, they provided, by the way, I will say, LinkedIn is the rare example of them providing hard numbers. 875 yes. million members. Mm-hmm. Strongest growth internationally, to, I think, Mary Jo's point earlier. Someone said something about this, about how a lot of their growth is coming international.
Yeah.
They have newsletters that they offer, have over 150 million subscribers, up four yeah. times year over year. Members have added skills 365 million times to their profiles over the past year, up 43% year over year. Those are all numbers. Yeah. Right. Well, they're real numbers. Now, yeah. the thing we don't know is like 875 million members does not equate to monthly average users, right? Right. My guess is that Twitter, which is probably still in the 300 million range, probably has more active users than LinkedIn, but LinkedIn on paper has more.
Oh, LinkedIn members. Has to be much more valuable. Because first of all, Twitter's free. And yeah. you pay LinkedIn. In fact,
well, there are
LinkedIn professional accounts very expensive.
You can be free on LinkedIn.
Yeah, but
it can be free.
Yeah, but
I know.
Yeah, they really encourage you. Like they do things like, hey, want to know who looked at your profile? Huh?
Yeah,
you want to know?
Yeah.
Huh?
Sure. Well, they are getting good at advertising over there. So
LinkedIn's different too. It's clean and it's business focused, and there's a lot of good content as well as. The people
so
you need to
are you suggesting
with?
That if I pay for a service, it gets clean and professional? And
yeah, there's still spam and junk on LinkedIn, but not nearly as much.
Is.
Yeah.
That seems like a good idea to me. I like that.
Lisa loves LinkedIn. I will never have to look for a job again, God willing.
Yeah.
So I actually got rid of LinkedIn. But anybody who's in business and you know wants to you know network, that's the place to do it.
Yeah,
right.
They and if you're a journalist.
Some people live on it. I'm not.
That's how we find out who doesn't work for somebody, right?
Exactly.
You go to LinkedIn.
Yep.
Right.
yep. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Microsoft has owned two tools that to me seem to be designed for journalists, OneNote and LinkedIn. You know?
Only one works.
I guess it's a market, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, Lou Maresca, who does our This Week in Enterprise Tech, and was on Twit this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently has been using Loop.
Oh, that guy.
Loves it.
Tell him to hook us up.
Why I know. Hook us up, Lou. He says it's great. You're going to love it.
I can't wait. Yeah, I'm going to love it.
He's on the office team, so I think he probably
I know.
Gets
that helps.
A little priority there. But
he probably has a legless avatar, too. He probably has all the things.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't now?
We don't.
I can tell I'm not at home because I keep bumping my head into the microphone.
Microsoft's financial outlook for Q2 and beyond.
Yeah, just not great.
Not great.
In a nutshell, yeah.
They're
being very pessimistic. They typically are pessimistic. Like they're on the conservative side when they give guidance, but they're giving some pretty harsh guidance for the next few quarters.
Yeah,
you kind of have to do that, right?
Dips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what you want to do is exceed your expectations and then say, oh, you know, we're just such a great company. We didn't know, you know. But the problem is, some of the numbers are really bad. Windows and Surface, I noted. And then Xbox, too, single digit for Xbox. Yeah. But high 30, you know, 30-ish percentage, whatever that means, like 37 to 39% dip in revenues for Windows. That's not good.
Yeah, that's not great. No.
Holiday
Azure,
quarter, by
the way. Said is Azure is going to be down five points in the next quarter. So that's also not great.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
That's not growth is down. That's down is down.
Down is down.
So,
that's right.
It's so confusing because sometimes they say, well, our growth was down.
Right.
Growth. It's not growth slowing. No.
Percentage of points. They also sometimes conflate those two things.
It's very confusing. Well,
constant currency. Yep. I never want to hear that term again in my life.
I wish I had an extension in my browser that would remove every reference to constant currency. I'm sure there must be a. Why do they even? I don't even know why they add it.
Because of currency fluctuations, you can't.
No, I understand that. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase. I mean, I understand that part. But in other words, see, things would be awesome if we didn't have to deal with the currency fluctuation.
Exactly.
Hey guys, you chose to incorporate the United States. I'm sorry that the dollar's going gangbusters right now, but that's how it works.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. They're being pretty pessimistic, but they're also saying, you know, we're trying to help customers basically get through this. And so we're helping him optimize costs, and it's going to hurt us that we're doing this. But yeah, we got to do it because we want people to keep going to the cloud. So yeah.
Yes, and they will. They will.
On that cheery note, that was
Well, no, this is, we did have some learnings from these earnings.
We
That's,
did.
Boy,
yeah.
there's a lot to say there. That's
I thought this was a really interesting one. And, you know, I get the pessimism, but, you know, I, like I said, given the way the world is going, this is pretty solid. And this company is set up for future growth, but it's also just set up to survive. It's so diverse as a business. That was the smartest thing I think they've ever done. You know, they were kind of the one product, maybe we call it two, three product company for a long, long time. And they finally kind of woke up to that.
Who else? This was a big week for earnings. Lots of earnings.
Yeah. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but Google and Spotify also announced earnings. Alphabet, I should say. I always look at Alphabet for a couple of things. Size compared to Microsoft. So $69 billion in revenues compared to $50 for Microsoft. So they're a bigger company. But almost 80% of their revenues comes from advertising, right? I think it was 79% if I remember. And Google Cloud was $6.9 billion in revenues. So, you know, what was the – I don't remember the Microsoft Cloud number, but it was probably $25 billion, $26 somewhere in there.
$25 billion, or maybe $27. Yeah, so, yeah, it's like around there.
So we can compare those right there. I mean, Google Cloud is just a distant third, you know, in that market and still is. They've been more aggressive than Microsoft so far about cutting products. They actually grew their – I didn't write this in my story, but they grew their employee base pretty, I think by 10,000 people in the quarter somehow. That's like, I think that's going to have to stop. I don't know what they're doing there. But anyway, that's kind of interesting because this company has been pretty aggressive about cutting costs. Yeah. And then why do I include Spotify in this list? I have no idea. So Spotify, actually, I can't think of any reason. This, we don't have to talk about this too much, but Spotify has 456 million users. And 195 million of which are paid subscribers. And now they're complaining that Apple is stopping them from getting their audiobook stuff into the app because Apple will not approve it for the store because Apple is the most terrible company on earth. And I wish people would kind of wake up to that.
It's getting worse, I have to say. So this story here is really creepy because they did approve it.
They
did approve it for Spotify. Spotify added books. They approved it. They went through. And then Spotify did an update. And all of a sudden, they unapproved it and said, oh, you can't do that. So did they not notice or did they, what? Did they change their tune? I think this is anti-competitive. This is starting
to be really, really awful. This is the Apple playbook, right? Yeah. You have very unclear rules, and then you arbitrarily apply them to your competitors, you know, when they have a product or service that competes with what you're doing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know why I included that in the notes. I wrote the story, but it doesn't really matter to us.
Right.
Sorry. I was padding the notes. I didn't think we had enough to talk about.
Off topic.
I know. I got so excited. I was.
Don't pad the notes, dude. There's plenty to say.
Need to pad them.
No need to pad.
I know that was stupid.
Apple's earnings are Thursday, and I can tell you right now, they're going to have the best quarter of ever, because they always do.
You think?
They always do.
Well, this isn't the big, let's see, no, it is the big iPhone quarter, isn't it?
Yep. Wait. No.
It's a little bit iPhone.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
they'll benefit quarter, over. Isn't it? Yeah.
They'll benefit over two.
Yeah. So typically these two quarters are very, this quarter that we're in and the one previous are very big.
I think it's going to be huge. And, you know, the news this year is the big version of the non-Pro 12 isn't selling, but that's what happened last year with the mini version, so.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yep.
It's going to be fine.
It's good news for Apple because the 14 Pro isn't selling because everybody wants, or 14 Plus isn't selling because everybody wants the 14 Pro. And
that's
selling like hotcakes.
And then next year they'll actually do USB-C and everyone will upgrade because that's what we've wanted for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know,
they finally admitted it. Yeah, we got to do it.
Mm.
Yep.
Yep.
Greg Joswiak said, yeah, of course we're going USB-C. Jaws. And somebody else said, when asked about touch on Mac OS, said, we'll see what happens.
Which, oh, my God. No, stop.
Yes. They usually say, no, absolutely not. Never. No way. I think it was Craig Federighi says, well, we'll have to see.
Oh, they are all, they're horrible. God, they're so horrible. You know, what would it be like to follow this company?
Mary Jo, you're going to look forward to never having to thinking about Apple ever, ever.
I really am.
Ever.
It's going to be kind of great.
Again.
It is. I got to admit.
They're so terrible. That's awful.
It's going to be kind of great.
Nobody wants a microwave and a refrigerator until we sell it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yep. Or whatever the comparison was, a toaster and a refrigerator, whatever.
Little break here and then more to come. We have the back of the book. Mm-hmm. We have our typical Microsoft 365 section, a dev section.
I'm going to sing a rendition of Wind Beneath My Wings for Mary Jo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be nice. Lord.
Yep. Did
signing
you ever
off,
know
man.
You are my hero?
Yep. Okay. You thought I already hit puberty. Wait till you hear me sing.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Collide. We like Collide. I love Collide. And I know this is a little bit of a challenge for some IT professionals. If you could put a plexiglass wall between your users and their technology, you probably would, except is that the right way to do it? It's look, I am very sympathetic. The challenge with device security is it's always been hard to scale. The bigger you are, the more edge cases, right, you introduce. The easier it is for some pretty big issues just to kind of escape your notice, and then all of a sudden you notice, and it's a problem. And then, you know, remote work, which isn't over, is it? Hybrid work, and the challenge got exponentially harder. Whether you're a fast-growing startup that needs to graduate from managing device inventory in Google Sheets, guilty, or an enterprise trying to speed up service desk issues, you got to have visibility into your fleet of devices in order to meet security goals and to keep everything running smoothly. This is a challenge, especially when, as it is here, your design team uses Macs, your editors use Windows, accounting is on Windows, developers are on Linux. You need Collide, K-O-L-I-D-E, endpoint security that gives IT teams a single dashboard for all devices across all operating systems and gives you all the information you need. Collide answers questions MDMs just can't, like, do you have production data being stored on devices? Are all your developers' SSH keys encrypted, right? Or are they keeping their public key public and their private key private? I can't tell you how often I see private keys published in public. That's not good. And a host of other data points. You'd have to write a custom shell script maybe if you really, you know, were ambitious to learn about. Think about it. If a Linux vulnerability is exposed tomorrow, how many machines will you have at risk and how quickly can you get to them? Can you file a ticket with the team that manages your MDM and then wait for days for the report to get back and then send a mass email and then say, please open the email and please apply the patches? No. With Collide, you have real-time access to your fleet's data. And instead of installing intrusive agents or locking down devices, Collide takes a user-focused approach. And I think this is the one thing that can be challenging. But I really want to tell you, this is the right way to do it. It communicates security recommendations to your employees directly on Slack. You know exactly what's going on. But now you're enrolling them as, you know, your lieutenants. Your assistants in this time of need. Hey, you know, Joe, and it says this, by the way, it doesn't say it from you, which is really nice because it's in the Slack message. You know, we noticed your SSH private key is in your download folder. You might want to put that somewhere else. It tells them why it's important, how to fix it, and now they're on the team. So this is a solution that really works for everybody. You can answer every question you have about your fleet without intruding on your workforce. Visit collide.com/WW to find out how. KOLIDE.com/WW. If you follow that link, got to follow that link though, WW, right? Put that on there so you can hook you up with a goodie bag, including a t-shirt. This is one of them. This is my favorite though, because it takes a little while. I like t-shirts that you have to decipher. This is another Collide t-shirt. So you got a bunch of Pinocchios flying across the screen. Their nose is getting bigger and bigger. And then there's one without a big nose, and it says Honest Security. That's all. And then in the back, it says collide.com. That's a nice t-shirt. They've also got stickers. Put on your laptop. And when it's time for a beer, a light coaster.
They get us.
Keeping that there. Yeah. they get you. They get you, IT professionals, right? This is all you have to do is activate a free trial. KOLIDE.com/WW. KOLIDE.com/WW. Thank you so much, Collide, for, I think, doing the right thing, which is getting users involved in the fix. And I love it that they're cross-platform. And thank you so much for supporting Windows Weekly. And you support us when you use that address, right? Collide.com/dub. Microsoft 365. Anything to report there?
Indeed.
Whoa.
You know it.
Oh, yes.
A couple of random things here. So everybody, well, most people probably know that the Windows subsystem for Android is part of Windows 11. It just quietly came out of preview, apparently.
I saw that.
Probably.
It's hysterical.
Yeah. No news story, whatever. Yeah. When Microsoft announced Windows version 22H2, they were talking about having 50,000 apps in a store. I checked recently. It was 57 apps. So that's going to be a big change whenever that happens. But, you know, someday it will be available in 31 markets soon as well. But on the GitHub page, speaking of GitHub for the Windows subsystem for Android, they published a roadmap. I'm not sure if this is for the first time, but they have published a roadmap. And one of the big things that's on there is Android 13. And I'm not sure what that's going to do for you, because really this thing exists just to run apps, but it will be there. Picture-in-picture support, file transfer, which I assume is between hosts and guests. That will be kind of interesting. So if you do stuff in that environment, but it's not like you're bringing up an Android window, right? This would be within apps. So if you have apps that do kind of a file access, I assume what that means is you'll be able to transfer files down to the Windows operating system. So some interesting stuff there. But really, I'm just waiting for this 50,000 app thing. I can't wait to see it. Although, given the quality of apps in the store now, all it's going to do is make it harder to find good ones. So we'll see.
50,000 apps, 25,000 of which are malware.
Yeah, yeah,
10,000 more than that. Which are fart apps.
Yeah, exactly.
The rest will be great.
Yep.
The rest will be fantastic.
So, Google also recently announced that they're going to end support. This is, I think, the third or fourth time they've announced this. I guess they're going to carry through this time for Windows 7 for Chrome, starting in February 2023. So, Microsoft, as you might remember, had an extended support program for Windows 7 that is expiring in January. Extended Security Update Program. ESU. That is, I think, the same day or around the same time that Windows 8.1 support will end. Probably not coincidental. And they want everyone on Windows 10 or Windows 11, of course.
Paul,
so that's going to be...
Steve was so upset about Chrome ending support for Windows 7. Yeah, he's still using Windows
7. He's not running 7.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was on 10. No, he's...
Well, he has some 10s and some 11s, but his main machine, the machine he writes code on,
yeah. Well, if you miss the Windows 7 look and feel, I mean, look into window blinds. It works on Windows 11.
It's not about,
I think, one of the skins.
Steve is not a superficial guy. It's not about the look and feel.
Okay.
It's about, I don't know what it's about.
Listen, he cares about security. There is no way that Windows 7 is as secure as Windows 10 or 11. No way.
I'm sure he's not paying for the extended security update.
No.
Right?
He just...
You know what this is? This is a really smart guy who is going to try to outthink the industry. And he's probably one of the smartest voices in this part of it. But I feel very strongly when it comes to security, especially, but just compatibility. I mean, everything, but yeah. Security. You got to stay up to date with the latest version of the OS.
What do you think about his contention, though, that Google's just there's no technical reason why Google is stopping. Is not offering Chrome on 7 now, right?
Listen, they tried to do this at least three times in the past. I don't remember the exact number or the exact date, but at one of those events, what they said was we still have, it was a really low number, like 20 million, something like that, people that were using Chrome on Windows 7. Actually, that might have been early 2020 when that happened. So it was something like that. So they've tried to do this a few times. Honestly, I think linking this to the expiration of support for a version of whatever operating system makes sense.
It makes sense. It's a good time to do it.
Why would Google have to support a version of Windows that Microsoft isn't supporting?
See,
you know, that doesn't make sense.
The irony of this is Steve's bread and butter is SpinRight, which hasn't been updated since 2004 and requires DOS. I'm not kidding. So it ships with free DOS. And in order to use it, you have to boot up to DOS and run SpinRight from DOS. So I think he is of the opinion that you should continue to support older operating
systems. I would say this to Steve, you know, there's an entire industry out there that's not using DOS, and maybe...
He's working on it. The new version won't require DOS, I don't think.
Okay.
You don't think.
Last time I talked to him, I remember he was looking into ARM. I think he was talking about learning ARM assembly language, if I'm not mistaken.
Good. Yeah,
this was some time ago. But
I mean, gosh, the difference between ARM assembly and 8086 assemblies, night and day. But what he doesn't like about ARM, what he doesn't like about it is he says with one instruction on x86, I can, I don't know what it was, do a complete multiply, and it takes 10 on ARM because it's, you know, reduced instruction set. So you have to kind of assemble the thing, and he doesn't like that, so...
You know, if you want less verbose code, I mean, there are higher level languages.
What about Rust?
I think Steve likes Rust. Steve likes Rust. He's a Rust.
Oh, okay. Well,
I don't think he uses Rust. Don't get me wrong.
He just likes the idea.
He likes
idea
the concept.
Of Rust.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Rust never
probably
sleeps.
Never going to use it, but whatever.
I started learning it. I got the. You know, when the Rust was new and I got the programming on Rust and all that. And because I'm a hobbyist.
From a language point of view, like, what do you compare it to? What does it look like?
It's a little bit like a Java in terms of the verbosity.
Is it a curly brace language with semicolons?
Yeah, it's C-like. Everything is C-like now. Yeah. But it's statically typed. There's a lot of security built in. There's garbage collection. It's not garbage collected exactly, but they're doing some memory management.
Okay.
It's interesting. I think it's a really cool language written by Mozilla. They wanted to do something that they could do a browser and very secure.
Oh, we're going to need something to remember them by. Too much.
It's a good language. If you were in a team as a professional programmer, I think it makes a lot of sense. As an individual programmer, I don't like writing.
I've never looked at it, but I don't.
Guys, if Mark Rusinovich likes it, it's perfect for team.
Sure. Much better than C++, in my opinion.
Yeah, the work he's doing, exactly. It probably does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Much better. And Linux kernels are going to have Rust in it now. And I imagine, anyway. It's a good language, but so is C#, so is TypeScript. Microsoft has some very good modern languages.
Yep. Yeah. Although C#, it's already 21 years old or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, you don't want to. Okay, I'm using a language that's as old as I am.
Well, there's something to be said for stability.
Exactly. I was telling Steve this yesterday. Code that if I had written, I wish I had learned Lisp in the 80s, but if I had written a program in the 80s in Common Lisp, it would still run today. It hasn't changed. There's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
It does mean that the newest stuff, you know, concurrency and stuff like that, their libraries, and it's a little trickier, but... I like the idea of stability. I'm not against that. I'm not using Windows 7. Not that crazy. Anyway. What else?
We were talking about this Office app transitioning to a Microsoft 365 app. There was very little information about it. Microsoft has now posted a video showing off what this is going to look like. It looks a lot like the Office app, frankly.
But the thing
to remember here is they're going to use the same UI across three different places, right? So it's the Office app on desktop for Windows. There's the Office app on mobile for Android and iPhone and probably iPad or whatever. And then office.com on the web. So this is going to be the common UI. We've talked a lot in the past about how these things were often very close to each other. Even with the Windows 11 start menu, by adding that recommended section, is getting a little bit like the Office app. But they're going to finally do this all, you know, one thing. It's going to be the same everywhere. So it looks fine. I think what's going to happen is, I don't know what the timing is, November, I think. we'll wake up one day, they will auto update, we'll open it and say, oh, look, it looks different. You know, but anyway, there is a video out there on YouTube if you want to take a look at that. It's called Introducing the Microsoft 365 App. So it should be easy to find.
And then, yeah, Lou was funny about that again because he works on the Office team, Lou Maresca, yeah. Lou MM. And he said, yeah, we were a little perturbed about losing the name Office. But I said, well, don't worry because Paul and Mary Jo said it's still going nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was relieved.
He's not the first person of the first group at Microsoft that has watched one of their brands be subsumed by Microsoft. You know, remember it happened to Surface devices. They got rid of the Surface logo.
Yep.
And Surface branding.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what happens.
Speaking of Surface Duo getting a little upgrade.
Now, I am a notable critic, perhaps, of these devices, but I got to say, this is an interesting idea, and I really like where this is going. And not so much for dual screen devices, which I think are goofy, but rather to some future Surface device that runs Android, right? So what Microsoft is doing is they're upgrading Surface Duo and Surface Duo 2, so it's both generations, to Android 12L. And this was kind of a weird interim version they did over the winter last year, where they took Android 12 and they adapted it for large screen, split screen, folding screen, Chromebook, whatever devices, right? And Google's been doing a lot of work in their own apps to make them look good and run good on those types of devices. That's been a big push of theirs for the past year. Now, Android 13 has come out since then, and I believe it incorporates all of the stuff from Android 12L, but I think L stands for large, by the way, not light or whatever. Okay, so it's getting Android 12L. Okay, cool. It's not Android 13, but it's a push forward. But the big thing they're doing, and this is what I agree with completely, this is such a good idea, and I'm surprised they just didn't do this from the beginning, although I guess there were little elements of it, is they're doing a visual refresh of the UI that includes two apps, Settings, which was there already, and Quick Settings, which is something that's in Windows 11, and they look like the versions in Windows 11. They're also updating across the system for icons, colors, UI controls, etc., to look like Windows 11. So it's not there. I don't think it's going to be there completely in V1, but over time, the goal is to make this thing look as much like Windows 11 as possible, so that people who use both systems can move between them more seamlessly. And this, I think, points to a future where, I'm just making this up now, but if you imagine like a Surface Go type tablet, instead of running Windows, which is not great in low memory situations, etc., offer a version with Android instead. And now you've got all these Google and Microsoft apps that run full screen and look great, right? And you can have a keyboard and a trackpad and all that stuff. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if that isn't where they're going with this. I'm not saying there won't be a future Duo device, although I'm not really sure there needs to be, frankly. But I think this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Mary Jo is not
green. Like your thinking. Nope. I like your thinking on this. And I just have stopped covering the Duo because I don't really have many readers who care about it. I mean, there are some enthusiasts who are all in on the Duo, but I just don't, when I write about it, it gets no traffic. Nobody cares. And so I like your idea that maybe they're continuing all this work and investment. I mean, they have a huge team. I don't know how many people, but like they put a lot of people on this Android team at Microsoft. And what are they working on, right? Like, are you just working on the Duo?
And this has come up in the past, too. I mean, probably when they released the Duo, which was, I would have said something like, look, I don't think dual screen devices make any sense. However, I do think Microsoft making Android devices can make sense because it's a vehicle for Microsoft 365.
Right.
And they've done they do whatever you think of their customizations. It certainly has a unique kind of look and feel to it. But I think one of the things they got right in Windows 11 was the UI. I think, or the UX, I should call it. UI, whatever it is. The look and feel of Windows 11. I think it's pretty. It's modern. It's nice. It's calm. It's all the things they say it is, you know. But you could apply it very easily to Android. And and maybe, that's an idea.
Yeah. I mean, you can connect to Windows 365 in the cloud on an Android device.
Yep. Right? Yeah, they have all the Android native apps. And why not? It's better than having an Android or an Amazon app store in Windows. You know, like at least this thing is real Android and it runs the Google Play Store. So you get all the apps. I mean, that's what people want. So I think it makes some sense.
Does it run the Google Play Store?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It comes with it.
It's just regular. It's a regular Android device.
It's the only thing. I mean, if it didn't, it would even make, it would make even less sense. No, that's.
I thought they were using Android open source.
No, no, it's not AOSP. It's a Google device. Yeah.
Yeah, it has all the. Yeah, it comes with Chrome and Google Search is the default. Et cetera. Yeah. Yep. Huh.
Okay. You can get the original one for $320 now on Amazon. not the new one, not the current one. Last one.
Well, I give them a little credit for updating both of them. You could imagine them saying we're only doing this for two. Yeah. You know, the more recent one. So
So good if you want to try it, you know, it came. Yeah. The original Surface came with 10 Duo. Came with 10.
Yeah, they've always been behind on this stuff. I assume the last one came with 11. So 12 was last year. 12L was probably finished in February or March.
I look at it every year. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I'll look at it if they come out with a 3, which I'm sure they will. I will absolutely check it out. I love the idea. I feel like there's something there.
I like the idea of a Microsoft Android device. Dual screens, goofy. Well,
the camera is so wonky on that thing, like how you take a picture.
That's why the next one might be better. At least they have a camera this time. Varuna said, I just got my Surface Duo today. Android 12L is really good with it. It's a nice companion device. He's an IRC.
There you go. Okay.
It's a companion device, so that's telling. Right? Yeah. It's not his main.
It is. No, it is. But I think they could make an Android device that would be a device, not just a companion. I think they could do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some. Oh, you mean just like a regular phone?
Yeah, like a tablet. Just make a tablet.
Too obviously a tablet.
No, not a phone. Make a tablet.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Like Surface Pro today can be had in ARM or x86.
Much rather
Surface
have an
Go
ARM.
In the future. What if Surface Go could be had in Android or x86?
Let's face it. Yeah. Android on ARM is better than Windows on ARM, right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I think you have to say yes. Maybe not forever, but I think for today.
Yeah, I think you do. Definitely for today.
Yeah. It's more mature.
It's more performant.
Yeah.
It was designed to run on this platform, so there's no app issues, et cetera. Right. So.
Mm-hmm. 10 years ago today, what happened?
We're not going to talk about that. So looking at Xbox.
No, we are.
10 years ago
at midnight yesterday, I was standing in Times Square.
Yeah, so was I.
Waiting for the Microsoft store.
Were you dressed as a giant Elmo, Paul?
I wasn't. Neither of us were.
He's getting a little huggy.
We wanted to get a Surface RT to check it out, and Windows 8 was launching, and it was like, all right.
Yeah, you bought one. You bought an RT, didn't you?
Yep. Yep, and Panos signed my box that it came in. So that was 10 years ago today. I told Paul I put an Easter egg in the show notes, and the Easter egg is the link to the story. It's an interview with Stephen Sinofsky.
That's worse than you. That's so bad.
You know what? You're off the show.
The reason I linked it is because the person who interviewed him at Ars Technica asked him about how did it feel to get negative press reaction to Windows 8, and he cites Paul Theriot in the story.
Really? Yeah, I'm not
he
reading.
Says,
don't tell me.
You want to hear this?
He says that son of a bitch, Paul Theriot.
Not what you think. No, he said there were reviews and first looks that were glowing about the product. For example, Paul Theriot tweeted, "Hello, Windows 8. This is iPad. You win." That's what he quoted.
Oh, Paul, I'm so sorry.
I didn't want to bring it up earlier in the show because I knew it would.
He did that to hurt me.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Did you actually tweet that?
It sounds like something I would say.
Yeah.
It's
a little premature, I might say.
He didn't mention the change in feeling around that. This whole interview is very interesting. It's like somebody trying to rewrite history. Right.
Of course, went over my history of Windows thing over the past year. And when I got to this era, I was, of course, looking at what I wrote at the time. And I can see what I was doing, which was, and I actually said this explicitly, like, this release is so insane that all you can do is just hang on for dear life and just go with it. Like, it's like this is happening no matter what I say. So. Yeah. Just go with it, you know?
And I think it's interesting. You can cherry pick things, right? Like he cherry picked that quote. And also he's like, you know what? Nobody gives us the credit for the fact that people love this Windows 8 thing. I'm like, no, they didn't. People were screaming about it, like, don't come to market with it.
Right. Right.
Look at anyway. You, Scooter X. His Google Foo is excellent.
Very. Yep.
September 13. Wow. Metro Twit. Look at that long zangs up.
Oh, man.
Metro Twit. Wow.
Wow.
That was his Twitter client.
Yep.
That was a very fanciful quote from iPad.
Well, you know, this is the whole toaster refrigerator thing. Yeah. Like, you know, Apple CEO, Apple executives made fun of the tablet thing with Windows 8.
Yep.
And then they made an iPad Pro and they look like jerks. You know, now granted, they got some things right. They got a lot of stuff wrong, though. I mean, from the point of view of a productivity scenario, the iPad Pro, even today, is still very stilted. It's gotten a lot better. Yeah. But, you know, the iPad at the time, we knew people who, there were people in my company at the time who were trying to make an iPad work for work back in the early days. So a USB keyboard, there was no mouse or anything like that. They'd have like this whole setup with like a stand and so they could like lean it up and look at it when they were typing and everything. And I remember this guy I worked with, actually it was Sean, you know, Sean. He said, but Paul, I can get real work done on an iPad. And I said, then you're not working hard enough.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if that's true, then you're not doing it. I mean, that's crazy.
I'm a huge iPad fan, and I really love the iPad Pro, but I think it's nuts, even today with the iPad Pro and the keyboard and everything, to make it your computer. It's not a PC. It's not intended to be.
Right.
I use an iPad every single day. I have for years. I use it to read.
Yes.
That's what I do.
I use my iPad Mini to read. I use my iPad Pro for photo editing with a pencil. It's incredible. It's better than a PC. But instead of saying this is the future of computing, Apple should just say this is, and I think in their hearts, this is what they think. This is a tool for a certain kind of computing.
Yeah.
That's right.
I love.
They haven't helped matters by, you know, they have those, you know, what's a computer
PC?
Ads?
What's a
or whatever. Yeah, it's like, ask your mother. She knows.
Yeah. No, that's those a great mistake. Resources. But I don't think that's how they feel internally. I think they understand that they're two different things for two different uses.
Well, it's not like they're not selling something else that is a computer. That's what's weird about it. They're advertising against a product they already make, too. That's doing pretty well. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, yeah, that was it. That was Windows 8 was something we had to get through, you know.
We did,
and we did, and we did.
We did.
Well, thank you for that, Mary Jo.
I would like to do a dramatic reading from the Ars Technica interview with Stephen Sanofsky.
I'd like you not to do that.
Bring it to life. Who designed the tile-based Metro interface? Did you consider any alternatives? No, I'm not going to read this because it's too horrible.
Yeah, I just left it there for Paul to look
that,
at later.
His answers right there are is everything that was wrong with this product. It's amazing to me after all these years how we can still get everything wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, what about Metro? It's like we wanted to have a similar design language. No, you should have had the same design language, you idiot. Like, instead of working with that team, why are you making me do this? I'm sorry.
Sorry, I shouldn't have done this. I know.
Freak me out. No, it's okay.
The most interesting thing about the press reaction to Windows 8 was how that reaction has been revised over time. Yeah.
Nope.
as soon as they started using it, they started revising. The product did what it did in the market, and I'm not in any way disputing that.
This is lacking in context. This is about the thing we just talked about. People trying to use an iPad for work. People forget what an iPad was like that year. Well, it was brand new. People were trying to use it with a keyboard. They were trying to, you know, pretend that it was a computer. It's not a computer.
Yeah.
This is just whatever. Yeah. this is just context.
Yeah.
I'm never wrong, so that doesn't make sense.
No, this is very revisionist. You're right, Mary Jo. This is totally revisionist history.
I remember how many articles I wrote leading up to the launch of Windows 8 from quoting all kinds of people who are Windows users going, I'm not going to use that. Like, you can't use it with a keyboard. What the heck is that?
I mean, you can go back and read. What I wrote is available. I mean, I remember talking to the guy who designed this thing, and we talked about this. He didn't have words to describe the UI parts. And I said, this thing has a name. And he said, no, it's just charms. And I had that moment where I was like, these people have no idea what they're talking about. They have no idea. Yeah. They don't know what they're doing.
No, you know? No one knew how to use it. They didn't want to embed any instructions in it because they wanted people to figure it out and just make it, quote, pretend it was intuitive.
We've told this great, great story about a year after Windows 8, where you and I were in New York for probably a Surface launch, and we were standing with Frank Shaw, I think at the flooded, you know, New York thing they had. Remember the flooded? Yeah. I think that's where it was. And you said, oh, it's a big anniversary coming up. And Frank said, what's that? And he said, well, it's the anniversary of when he left the company. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay. And I said, well, there's an even bigger anniversary coming up. He says, what's that? And I said, well, whatever the day was, in January or something, his NDA runs out. And then he can start hiring people from Microsoft and start his next company. And then Frank said, I just hope that whatever Steven does next is just as successful as Windows 8. It's still the best. Still the best quote I've ever gotten.
Yep. Sick burn. Wow.
Yeah, it was the best. It's still the best thing anyone's ever said in my presence. Beautiful.
Brilliant.
Yep.
How has your opinion of Windows 8 evolved or changed over the past 10 years? The Ars asked Mr. Sanofsky. First, so much of the feedback about Windows 8 focused on removal of the start menu. The literal menu, which we knew at the time had reached its functional limits. Did you know?
Really? Because we're still using it today.
The start menu 10 years ago had reached its functional limits?
Yeah, he knew that. Yeah. They should have asked customers what they thought about that before they did it.
So in many ways, I think the feedback overplayed the role of the start menu. Get this. Much the same way the early Windows critics overplayed the removal of C:\ from the core experience.
I cannot express how much I hate this person.
Paul's just going to go. He's going to have some cocktails tonight, and then he's going to go back and read this, and we'll see the results.
I'm not going to go back and read it. I'm not. I've already heard too much of it.
Okay. You've heard enough right now.
Yeah. You've heard more than you wanted to
hear. And we're very excited to announce the new co-host of Windows Weekly, a man Sinowski. With a lot of experience in the field.
Windows.
Oh, man.
No, I wouldn't do that to you, Paul.
He was in Boston briefly for some Harvard thing, and I invited him over to dinner with the hope that my wife would poison him. But
well, that's kind of you. That's generous.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah,
did
it was going to be
over?
Like that scene in Hannibal. No, he declined.
So, worried that he would be poisoned, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Anyway, good times 10 years ago. 10 years ago.
Doink. We've come a long way, baby.
I mean, it's funny because even this week I talked about mm-hmm. how app, because Apple is trying to grapple with a similar thing what do we do on it's going the other way this time though. What do we do on the iPad to make it more like a desktop operating system?
Well, that was always the big debate. Is it better to start with something big and complex and bring it down, or is it better to start with something small and scale it up? Apple did do the bring the big down to small with the iPhone, right? That was based on the Mac. So they stripped out everything you wouldn't need on a mobile device. That was kind of an issue. They worked. But honestly, I think the better approach is to start simple and small and build on, assuming you do a good job of it, right? You have to do it in a
well, and as I said,
a measured way.
We've been here before. There's a cautionary tale called Windows 8. You know, there's
And Apple's made a lot of mistakes along the way. I mean, remember their initial way they handled like keyboards and trackpads and the stage manager thing they're trying to do now, which isn't working very well apparently on iPads. It's hard. It's hard to meeting in the middle is hard. I think you're gonna have difficulties either way. But I bet there are a lot more iPads in the world than there are Windows tablets.
Yeah. Totally. Well, unless you include Surface.
I would include Surface in that.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Definitely.
Let's talk a little developer stuff here. You got something to talk about there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Project Volterra is here.
It came out. Woohoo! Yep.
Looks good, too.
$599.
This is the development kit mini, kind of like a mini computer.
Like a Mac Mini, kind of, right?
Yeah.
It's called Windows Dev Kit 2023 is the official name. Has a Snapdragon 8CX Generation 3 in it. It has 32 gigs of RAM, 512 gigs storage, Wi-Fi 6, Ethernet, 3 USB-As, 2 USB-Cs, 1 mini display port. That's what you get. So you can hook it up to your monitor.
That's a lot of computer for that much money. That's the most recent version of the Snap. It's not a... I thought it was going to be one of those, like a 6 series Snapdragon processor. No, this is the flagship.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
It's good.
Right. So this is aimed at developers. Like Microsoft is trying to get developers to buy this so that they can bring their apps natively to ARM, Windows on ARM. They can build them, test them, run them. A lot of people who are not developers are interested in this and buying it. So my point is, if you're an enthusiast, sure. I say yes. Like if you want to play around with this, if you're anybody who's not an enthusiast, a normal person, do not buy this. The Windows on ARM is not ready. It is absolutely not ready. Like, let's just be so clear. It's so not here yet.
I considered doing this podcast on that laptop, which is based on the same chipset. And then I I have enough problems. I'm in a different country. My connectivity is not that great.
Yeah.
I'm going to add like another wrench into this bike wheel, you know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You don't need to.
Don't think of it as a wrench. Think of it as a playing card, Paul.
Right. Did you buy one?
No.
It's tempting, isn't it?
But it is tempting. It's a good looking computer.
Right now.
This would be the way to go if you wanted to see what Windows on ARM was like, I guess.
Right.
Except for one thing. So one of the big advantages there, right? It's supposed to be the battery life and the touch stuff. And
exactly.
It's kind of a tough thing. Yeah. I mean, the ThinkPad I just reviewed, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's north of $1,000 to start. You know, it's going to screen.
Right. So I was talking to Rich Turner, who's at Microsoft, who's doing a lot of work on this device. Like, it's his baby, pretty much, right? Like, he's out there, like, defending it, answering questions about it. Mm-hmm. And I just said to him, okay, he kept saying, we're going to change your mind. I said, okay, change my mind. Like, why? Like, why do you think a normal person would want this? He goes, well, no, actually, no. It's not for normals. Yeah, it's for developers mostly. Well, and for enthusiasts who want to kick the tires of Windows on ARM at this point.
The smartest thing they did was it comes with 32 gigs of RAM, which is crazy.
Right.
I think the laptop I have is probably 16, which I think is about right because you need extra memory for emulation and, you know, to kind of help overcome some of the performance stuff. This thing will run Visual Studio soon. It will run it now in preview. There's a preview version of Visual Studio, full Visual Studio that has fewer workloads, but it does all the C# stuff. Like if you want to do Windows forums and WPF and UWP, it does all that. So if you want to do desktop development, it's there. And C++ too, I'm sorry. And I mean, I've tried it. It works. It seems to work fine. It's not like I'm creating like a web browser with it or whatever,
I'm just going to say what else happened this week on the hardware front was all the reviews started hitting of the Surface Laptop 5 and the Surface Pro 9 devices. Some people got the ARM-based Surface Pro 9. Some got the Intel. More got the ARM than the Intel. almost without exception, the people running the ARM one were like, this thing's not ready. Like, Microsoft thinks this is ready, right?
I came to the same conclusion. I didn't get the Surface Pro 9, but I have the ThinkPad. And it's like, it's definitely better than it's ever been. Yeah. There's no doubt. Right. It's noticeable.
Everybody says that. Yep.
But
everybody says
there's also those things where you alt tab and nothing happens and you wait and it finally comes up. Or you click in a browser tab and then the window kind of freezes up. Yep. You wait and it comes back, you know, but it's, or you launch an app launching is the worst. Like if you have an emulated app, the little picture comes up with the app and you wait. You know. Yeah. It's just,
I was like railing about this on Twitter this week and somebody said to me, I'm using an ARM-based Windows laptop and it works great. I'm getting like 26 hours of battery. I'm like, okay, explain how. How are you doing
that? Yeah, no, you're out of your mind. That's absolutely not true.
Well, the screen brightness is at 30% and I don't have any tabs open in my browser. I'm like, oh, there we go. Okay, cool. Yeah, right. Like not a real world use for me, maybe for some people, right?
Yeah, this is actually the Windows version of the thing I was describing with the iPad earlier, where you're trying to contort a device, in this case a PC, to behave like a single-tasking laptop.
Yeah,
and it's like you can do that, I guess, but there's already a tool that does this really well, and it doesn't have to single-task, and it's less expensive, and it's called an iPad, and there's a reason they sell so many of them because they really just work.
Yeah,
you know. Anyway, it's not horrible. I don't mean to say it like that.
It's cool.
It's better than it's ever been. Yeah. It's good for developers.
It's great. It's great for developers who think there is some viability at someday this platform will be interesting. It's not today. It's someday.
So the problem is you can flick a switch in Visual Studio and target ARM in addition to x86 and x64, but it doesn't tell you how it performs. You need to get the thing in the debugger and see where the holdups are and it having that native device is important. And I bet most people will play with it, but the reality is they're not going to sit there and use it day to day. They're going to remote it, the app, onto that thing and then use it just for that app to see what it looks like. I think that's how most people are going to do it, because you still have to see how the app works on your, you know, on the most important platform, which is X64. So it's really just a device to kind of add to your network with a screen, you know, or maybe not with a screen, probably with a screen, and use it that way, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But it's, and then on that note, it's a powerful computer. It's less expensive than a laptop, most of them. Although you could probably buy a cheap laptop that would have the, that low end chipset, which no one should ever buy. So I think it makes sense. It looks great too. It's a nice, looks like a nice computer.
It looks really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's no SIM card, I bet. That's the other thing with these. well, the Windows and ARM device. No, seriously, think about it. It's multi-touch, pen potentially, laptop form factor, battery life, and then cellular connectivity, which is something you really don't see.
That's in that box?
No, it's not. It's what I'm saying. These are the things it's missing.
Yeah.
So it's not a device to be used. People who buy.
It's for developers. Right.
It's for developers. Yeah, that's
it.
Right.
Is.
That's
it's
right.
called the Windows Dev Kit. That's the name of this machine, right?
Right. Yep.
Although I guess you could argue a developer might want to be playing with LTE or something. I don't know.
Well, that's one of the things I'm kind of thinking here. So you're a developer and you're targeting ARM. Depending on the app, I mean, I think the goal is we have millions of apps out in the world that run on X64, X86. We want them to run effectively on ARM. We want them to use that, I can't forget the name of it, EC something, the X64, the technology that lets you get into an X64 project, add ARM code to it to fill in the gaps rather than starting over from scratch with ARM, right? It's it's a kind of a halfway house between, you know, full native ARM and full native X64. So you want them to do that. And you have to have something to do it on, you know, to see that. But you, I don't, like I said, you can't just check a box. Like, you have to make sure it runs. It's not enough just, the apps already just run. We know that. They have to run well. But the problem is the people using these apps are going to have touch screens, laptops, LTE or 5G, maybe pens. And there's no way to test that stuff on this particular device. So it's, you know, it's a cheap way to get it done, but it's maybe not the full experience. It's not bad.
You're going to buy one. I know you're going to buy one.
He will.
I do want one.
Yeah. It's just a matter of time.
Yep.
But you, one thing you have already, Paul, and you probably should talk a little bit about it, is that fabulous new Xbox Series X just sitting right there. You know what Xbox Series X spells?
What?
Nothing.
Okay.
It's time for the Xbox segment.
Or as I will call it, the last Xbox segment that Mary Jo will need to endure.
Yes.
And for that reason, I'm going to keep the camera on her the whole time. Usually I I switch away from Mary Jo.
I'll just say I've started drinking my beer pick.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Actually, there's not much to talk about. So the first Xbox story we actually talked about. You're welcome.
Can I borrow your gong, Mary Jo? I think I'm going to be needing
it. I know. I should have rung it today.
I haven't needed to be gonged.
No, you haven't.
You haven't mostly a couple times.
Okay.
Not today. You're good.
We talked about 20 million people have at least tried Xbox Cloud Gaming as part of the earnings segment. So no reason to beat that to death. It is the 25th anniversary, or it is coming up, the 25th anniversary of the Age of Empires franchise. So Microsoft announced, this is kind of weird, Age of Empires 2, Definitive Edition, and Age of Empires 4 are both coming to Xbox consoles next year. I guess they're like Star Trek movies. The even number ones are good or something. I don't know. I don't know why it's not 1 and 3, but anyway, those are the two they're bringing. I've never played Age of Empires. It's a kind of a, like, real, is it real-time strategy game or a, yeah, I think real-time strategy. I don't know. I'm not into that kind of thing. So if it's not Call of Duty, color me unimpressed.
How about driving? You like to drive down the road and see the scenery and.
I do. What is that? Is that the, oh, that's
the Logitech.
LG. Oh, the Logitech. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is Android based.
Yes.
So are you using, Xbox Game Pass here?
Or Xbox Cloud Gaming, I guess. How do I get out of camera mode? Is this What's on your game? Xbox, this looks Anthony? Like... This is Forza Horizon, or
this is a. He's streaming it from the cloud.
You're playing where? From the cloud, right? Yeah.
Right.
I can't figure out how to play it.
Back. You got to hit back. X the red. The that's not red on
exit
yours.
Exit photo mode. Yay! Sorry, I was in the photo mode. I just want to drive, man.
So I love these. This game series is the one that is always used for any demoing anything because despite the fact that it looks beautiful,
the other trigger.
it's for some reason like the lowest bandwidth, you know, whatever. Like it's the one that always runs really well.
I keep going into photo mode because unfortunately, left trigger is photo mode, right trigger is accelerator. There we go. Look at that. It looks pretty good.
This is streaming
off the cloud.
It's streaming.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
This is off the, is this X Cloud?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
Gosh, I'm a terrible driver. Hey, you must have it in vulnerable mode because I've basically driven into everything.
No, this is called, we call this Pennsylvania driver mode.
Watch out. Here I come. Oh, this is fun. This
I'm going to try to parallel park.
Boom. is that Three Rivers Stadium over there? All right, here we go. There, now I'm right in the right.
That was
line.
A good Pennsylvania reference, by the way.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Where the mighty Cuyahoga meets the beautiful. Oh, whoa!
They don't call it the Rust Belt for nothing.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
It does look a little rusty, doesn't it? That's pretty good. Yeah. Anthony's going to give it back, though, right? Why? Because it's not. $350 is why. 350 schmackers is why. But it's cheaper than the Steam Deck.
Right, but here's the cheapest thing you can do. You already have a phone and you already have a tablet, so buy those controllers that wrap around them.
Yeah, just get a wrap around.
You can do the same thing.
I have that for my Android phone.
And in fact, I have my eye on, there's one for the iPad that I'm like, there we go.
Thank you.
So Microsoft, they haven't announced any first party. They call them accessories. I think of them as controllers, but I guess controller accessories. So there's different things you can do. There's the thing that looks like what you were just doing where you have a phone and then the controller bit snaps around it and you've got the controller bits on either side. So there's a bunch of companies coming out with Xbox specific versions of that controller type, right? This is for exactly what you were just doing for Xbox Cloud Gaming. There's also the thing where you have an Xbox controller. And you buy a clip that sits on top of it.
Phone I have one of those. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I tried that. I probably still have one of those somewhere as well. But the one I really want is made by a company I've never heard of, but it's Riot PWR. And they make that stretchy controller type, but for an iPad. And that would be ideal for me because it'd
interesting.
Be
yeah.
much easier to see. So these are all things. There's a bunch of Microsoft has them on the Xbox Wire.
Honestly,
blog, but
with my 12.9-inch iPad on a stand, which I have it on anyway, and the Xbox
with a
controller.
Yep, there you go.
That's a pretty good gaming system.
Yes, and you can, I'm trying to think if I must have tried this. Yeah, it was a long time ago, but you can wire it in too. So if you, the USB, right?
Oh, yeah,
USB-C rather.
Yeah.
You could wire it in. So that's going to be the best we can do for latency. Wire the controller and stream the game on your iPad.
I also have the Amazon Luna controller.
Yeah.
Could probably
I want that. Xbox to adopt that style where the controller connects directly via Wi-Fi to the cloud and what you're kind of syncing up the display with what's happening with the controller. That has much better latency, much lower latency in my experience than the Xbox way of doing things.
I'm sorry, Mary Jo, I'm kind of prolonging this.
I'm just drinking.
Good.
Is she drooling? What's happening?
Have you tried all of them? Have you tried the Stadia?
I haven't tried it.
Stadia's history.
Tried Stadia. I tried Luna.
And Luna. Have you tried GeForce
Those both,
Now?
Yes, but only very briefly. The problem with GeForce Now to me is it's a PC thing. And I console is a bit of a stretch. Even I think we talked about this a few weeks ago. I think the future of Xbox as a platform is they have to get game makers to agree to target Xbox cloud gaming when they make a console game. So if you're going to make an Xbox game today, you have to show that it works on Xbox Series S and X because they have different hardware components and run differently. So you have to optimize it for each. I think the future of that requirement is you also have to target Xbox cloud gaming, because those things could be on mobile devices where the screen's really tiny and you can't see all these little bits of UI that are in a console or a PC game, right? So I'm just making this up. I'm not saying I know anything about this, but I feel like this has to be the future, because that will make games on mobile more viable. Like, one thing Microsoft has done is they've added touchscreen overlays on top of the game. So you can just, you don't use a controller, you just have the device. And so you're touching the screen and they have little controls like right on the screen. And I don't think that involves the original developer. They have to okay it. Maybe it does in some cases, you know, maybe it depends on the game, but there is some selection of games that offers that. And I think that's a big deal, but I think, you know, for going forward, they need to make sure that games work equally well, no matter what screen you're playing it on. Because today you're just taking an Xbox that's up on a cloud and you're putting the screen.
Right.
So instead of like a 55-inch, you know, 4K display, you've got like a 7-inch.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Right.
Look at guys, that. Wind it up.
Rachel's almost to the bottom of the beer. So Age of Empires 2 and 4.
Yep. Like Star Trek movies. They only do the even number ones. We don't know why. And then the controller stuff we just talked about. Yeah.
That's okay. That was it, Mary Jo.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's gone to coffee. Painless.
No, this is my beer in a cup.
Oh, wow. Aren't we a little fancy, huh?
Fancy.
Fancy. All right. One more commercial and then the back of the book and a farewell, a fond farewell to one of our own.
Me.
No songs will be allowed.
It's actually kind of a song and dance routine. I'm going to stand up for it, but
I'll sing the chorus. I'm ready.
Yikes.
This episode of Windows Weekly brought to you by our good friends. They've been with us almost as long as Mary Jo Foley. IT Pro TV. Since 2013, IT Pro TV. It all started, I met Don and Tim, Don Pizzette, Tim Broom, the founders at NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters Conference. We were doing a panel on streaming video, and they were IT trainers already, and they saw what we were doing at TWIT, and they said, that's, you know, ding, a light went off, and that's IT Pro TV was born. This is back in 2013. They now have a beautiful facility in Gainesville, Florida, 7 studios creating content. I want to say like ours, but really it's so much better. I can't really say that. Creating great content that you can stream, just like you can stream us on your computer, on your tablet, on your Roku, your Apple TV. You can watch it or listen to it anywhere and learn IT. Whether you're looking to get started in IT, and you may know that in order to get that first job, you almost always need to get certifications. They have all the certs. So you go there, you learn. I would say don't just study for the cert. Become an IT professional, get the cert, and now get a great job. And then if you're already in IT, you know, there's so much, there's always new stuff to learn. You can master the profession. And if you have a business with an IT team, IT Pro TV is a great way to develop your IT team. IT Pro TV offers virtual learning solutions for everyone. More than 5,800 hours of on-demand IT training. And it's all up to date. That's why they have those studios going Monday through Friday, because, you know, IT is a constantly changing field. So they're always updating this stuff. I would say, without a doubt, this is the most current IT content anywhere. They're adding new stuff every single day. Shows go from the studio to the library within 24 hours. So courses are always up to date. And it's very much hands-on. You may feel like, well, I want to touch stuff. Yeah, don't worry. IT Pro TV sets itself apart with hands-on learning because they have hosted virtual labs. So all you need is a browser, and you can set up a Windows server, set up Windows clients, do all. And I love it because when I do it and I make a mistake, I just close the tab on the browser, and no one knows. It's great. It's a great way to learn without breaking anything. You can also join IT Pro TV's very vibrant, very fun online communities of IT learners, 220,000 of them. I mean, that's amazing. Share in forums, engage with your instructors directly. You'll love the instructors. They call them edutainers. They are professionals in the field. So they're working professionals, but they all have a spark. They all have that something, that passion for what they're teaching. So that it communicates to you. It gives you that passion. It makes it fun and interesting and engaging. You can binge all you want with 20 to 30 minute episodes anytime you've got a break. You can also access IT Pro TV's searchable transcripts for everything. So you can search and find exactly the information you need. It's kind of like now it's kind of like a library of IT information and instruction. I think IT Pro TV is amazing. Now, we're just wrapping up Cybersecurity Awareness Month. IT Pro TV every month offers multiple free webinars you can watch. You can watch them live. Now they're all done for the month, but they're still on demand, so you can watch them whenever you want. Learn how to be cybersecure at home or around the office. That sounds like one you might want to share with friends, you know. Tim Broom, the founder, co-founder of IT Pro TV, our good friend, we love Tim, says it best himself. Somewhere I have a picture of me and Tim in the studio. We want to make life easier for people who want an IT career. Boy, you couldn't express it better. That's the whole point of IT Pro TV, and you'll love it. Get 30% off right now when you sign up at itpro.tv/windows. Use the code WW30. 30% off when you sign up at itpro.tv/windows. Use the code WW30. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for supporting us all this time. And you support us when you use WW30 as the offer code at itpro.tv/windows. All right, let's see here. Back of the book time. We're going to start with Paul Thurrott and a tip of the week. Paul? Oops, your microphone is off.
So.
There we go.
Sorry.
Now I hear you.
I mute myself because I often
sneeze, burp.
When you're doing things.
Yeah, you scream. Know.
Yep.
God darn.
Actually, more often than not, I laugh at something you say, and then I realize I'm being an idiot.
No, I always turn your mic off, too, so don't worry.
Yeah, okay. I can see why. So, anywho, for the past 2 years, I have been waiting for Microsoft to implement what they used to call simplified ribbon in the desktop versions of the Office apps. I actually had switched to using Markdown for writing my articles for the web, but hearing that this was coming back, I switched back to Microsoft Word and have waited 2 years for this to happen. They did bring a simplified ribbon to one Office app on desktop. That's Microsoft Outlook. That's the default now, but it's on none of the other apps. And I keep bringing this up. You know, I was like, what's going on with this? You've been talking about it forever. Last week, remember there was a story about dark mode on Word for the web. And of course, that reminded me that Word for the web, like the Office apps on the web, all have simplified ribbons. That's what I want on the desktop. So one of my readers wrote in and said, hey, I joined the Office Insider program on my Windows desktop. I got an update and said, hey, which style of toolbar do you want to use? And I said, oh, God, I got to try this. So I've enrolled on three different computers. I've only gotten it on one, but it is coming with some caveats. First of all, it's not called Simplified Ribbon anymore. Now it's just a toolbar. So instead of giving everyone the same simplified ribbon, which is what you get on the web, they're doing something different on desktop, which is today you can minimize the ribbon so that all you see is the tabs across the top. And that's actually what I've been doing for 2 years, by the way. It gives it kind of a nice minimalist look. But you can add a toolbar to that view. And what they're doing is they're customizing it based on your usage. So the commands you see in the toolbar are the top, you know, 10 or 15 or whatever it is that you use all the time. Oops. And I think that's a really cool idea. So that in some ways, that's a little bit better than a simplified ribbon. Some people have kind of said, well, hold on. There's something called a quick access toolbar in these Office apps. You can have it displayed below the ribbon. You can add commands to it. What's the difference? The difference is this thing is customized to what you actually use. That's the difference. That to me, this is a huge deal. So I'm hoping to get it on my other PCs. I don't know if you have to wait a little while or whatever. I had to wait a few days on this one. But what you have to do is go into, file account, Office Insider, sign up for the beta channel, check for updates. So get enrolled. And eventually you should see a new little pop-up say, hey, we have a new toolbar. And then it creates one for you that again is based on your usage. So
is it better than the ribbon?
So the ribbon actually doesn't go away. You can still, when the ribbon's customized, collapsed or minimized or whatever, you can click on the little headers and it brings the ribbon down so you can access all the commands. So that's still there. So you get the ribbon header. you have a toolbar underneath it. And if there's something that's not in the toolbar, you just click on the header and you still get the ribbon.
Oh, that's great.
And then it goes, yeah, it's perfect. Well, it's not perfect, but it's very good. And it's something, like I said, I mean, forever.
Something browsers have had for years.
Okay. I know.
Do you think this is part of the whole revamp of Office and Outlook and stuff? Like, you know, them trying to...
I don't know, but the thing that kills me about this is they went to all this effort to create simplified ribbons for those apps on the web.
And then they never brought them to market, right? Ever.
Right. So we have this system now where Office on desktop looks completely different from Office on the web. So now they're bringing yet another new UI to the desktop. So it's still going to look different unless they choose to bring the, I don't know. It's
whole thing.
I'm just happy to have it, frankly. Yeah. I can't.
No, it's nice.
Stand.
I love it because I can never find anything in Office because I don't use a lot of these apps a lot, right? So, like, I'm always like, oh, I know where this is, but I don't know. I don't remember. So, it'll be kind of great to have your own toolbar where it's like your five or 10 misused things, right?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that if you look at the commands that are in the toolbar, those are the things I have to go to the ribbon for. The format painter is a big one. Not highlighted so much.
Use that all the time.
Yeah. But indenting is a big one for me, too. I have to use the, you know, I can do bullets and numbered lists just without the thing. But and I don't do highlighting. I'm not even sure where some of these come from. But Format Painter, I actually use, that's the big one. Like, that's the one I've needed a lot.
Yeah.
So it's right there. It's right in the front. So good.
Nice.
That's not, you know, again, probably this would have been an easy thing to do.
I know.
Years ago.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yep. I can't explain what's taking so long, but I'm just so happy. So I've been complaining about this for years. I know it's hard to imagine.
It is.
it finally arrived.
You complaining for years?
For
what?
Years?
I know.
So you do have to join the Office Insider program beta channel right now. Yes.
Right. That's right.
But soon, someday.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't gotten it on two of the three computers yet, but I don't know what the criteria is.
And your field guide.
Yeah, I just wanted a quick update on this. I still don't have the book version yet, but since I published the initial version to the web about 2 weeks ago, I've actually added 10 chapters now. I think it's up to about, I think it's 38 chapters. The PDF version is, I didn't believe it when I started. I think it's 375 pages. That's pretty big.
Wow.
I'm probably going to have to split it into multiple documents for the, you know, for the download because this is going to be too big, but it's coming along nicely is my point. So. If you are a Throat Premium member, you can access the whole thing. If you're not, you can access individual parts of it if you want to do that. That's fine, too. And the app pick is kind of a weird one. So this thing leaked last week out of Microsoft China, so you know it's safe. And it's called PC Manager. It's in a public beta. And what it is mostly is a front end to tools that already exist in Windows. And one of them is particularly interesting to me because one of those 10 chapters that I just uploaded is for storage management. And I was really kind of blown away by how many different ways you can do the same things with storage management. And in some cases, there are three different UIs for like disk cleanup is a good example. And there's a classic disk cleanup tool still in Windows 11. There's a disk cleanup interface under storage management in Windows 11. And then there's this kind of like, it's like, let me just see what it's called. It's called cleanup recommendations. And it's like yet another, it's a settings app front end for disk cleanup is what it is. So anyway, this thing pops around and I have storage management and literally it's a front end to disk clean. It's the same exact thing. So health check is in Windows, storage management's in Windows, process management, part of task manager. I don't know. You know, it's kind of a goofy thing to go in and say, here are the, kill an app this way, but you can do that. Startup app management, also part of task manager. The security bit, obviously also part of Windows already. But the thing at the top is new, and this is why I think people are comparing it to CC Cleaner. It has a memory usage and temporary file cleanup quick link. It's click boost. I don't know exactly what it's doing to memory to clean this up exactly. Maybe it's more aggressively killing off sleeping apps or whatever. I really have no idea, but it will also do a little bit of storage management. So temporary files is one area of disk cleanup. It's only one, but this is just kind of a quick way to clear up some space, both in RAM and on disk. So I don't know what's going to happen with this app. I don't know if they'll just release it as this utility like this, or I think this should be part of Windows, frankly. So we'll see what happens. Maybe this is a Windows 12 feature or something, but you can try it now. Don't be completely put off by the Chinese language thing that comes up right in the beginning. The rest of it's in English, but
what?
It's a leak. I know. But it works. You know, it does what it says it does. So
why is there Chinese at the beginning of it?
Because it leaked from Microsoft China.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
The app itself is all U.S. English.
It will be. But it's nothing new. You could do all of this stuff onesie twosie.
Yes.
Yeah, most of it. Yeah.
I've never recommended seat cleaner because my position has always been it can't do too much or it would break your system. It's too easy to break your system.
Yep.
So it can only do kind of whatever's safe, which ain't much. I would far prefer to use PC Manager since you know Microsoft's not going to break
your system. It is for Microsoft, so you know it's probably semi-safe.
I mean, and you might look at seat cleaner and say, oh, but I can be more aggressive. Don't.
Don't. I think Microsoft has been dealing with questions and complaints about CC Cleaner for so long. Someone finally said, can we just make one of these things?
Yeah.
And then we can say, don't do that, do this.
I bet
that's all it is, but yeah.
Enterprise pick of the week time with Mary Jo Foley.
So Paul probably remembers this. A long time ago, we heard Microsoft talking about this thing called the Unified Update Platform. They were telling us that it had something to do with Windows. It was going to be a way that features came to us for Windows. And then any other questions we asked, they were just like, nope, sorry, we have nothing more to say. So cut to this summer, there was a private preview that came out of Unified Update Platform, UUP. And as of this week, it's now in public preview. So what this is it's not a replacement to WSUS or Configuration Manager, but Microsoft says UUP will be the format for Windows 11 updates delivered to or via Configuration Manager and WSUS starting Q1 2023. So if you're an IT pro and you're having to deal with this, you need to go test this thing out now because it's now public. They have said in the past that UUP is a way that they're going to help reduce the size of Windows updates, but they've added some more things now. Automatic corruption repair, they say it'll help with. It'll bring more seamless updates, more control over installation time, more battery life, lighter download size, all the things you want in theory. But if you are somebody who uses WSUS or ConfigMan, you want to go test this public preview now because it's coming really soon. First quarter 2023. UUP.
It's no UDP, but it's pretty good.
It is not. Yeah. It is not.
It's what happens after too much beer. Code name pick of the week.
Okay. This is as of today. This is a fun one. So we already talked about Volterra being the code name for the Windows Dev Kit 2023 device that we were talking about, the $600 mini PC. But Zach Bowden over in Windows Central found out it's also known as Surface Project AH. He looked
well. There you go.
Right, and so we're like, okay, so it was built by the Surface team, which we kind of guessed.
Yeah.
But what's the AH? Right, everybody's guessing. My guess was ARM hopes, like they hope this will make ARM better.
Yep.
But everyone's just guessing, and Microsoft has not said, but when you look at your recovery images for this device, because Zach already bought one and has it, it says Surface Project AH. So anybody who has a good guess on what the AH is, let us know.
My mind initially went to A-hole, but I'm guessing that's
of course it did. Of course it did.
I'm guessing that's not it.
I thought ARM hardware, but that seems so mundane.
ARM hardware, that's what it is. I hate to tell you.
It's so mundane.
It's corporate. It's exactly what it is.
That's got it, of course. Yeah.
Let's see. Do you want to make your announcement or do you want to have beer?
We could do both.
Okay.
Okay.
Do the beer first. We're going to need something to drink.
Okay. So I found the perfect beer pick for this week in all ways. I needed a Halloween beer pick, so I found one. And the can, which I posted a picture of in the Discord.
Oh, my God. Is that? I couldn't figure out what that picture was. Now I know.
So,
okay.
So it's a woman skeleton podcasting.
Yep.
Like, how awesome is that, right? Like, when I saw the can, I'm like, I don't even know what this beer is, but I'm buying it, and it's going to be my beer pick.
That's
luckily,
interesting.
It's a good one.
That's funny.
Nightmare Brewing is the name of the brewery. They're in Bayshore, New York. They're known as a heavy metal brewery. They do all their can art is like this kind of insane stuff with like weird themes. And their beers have very weird names. This is Sororicide. So I have two sisters. I'm not dissing my sisters here with this pick, but that's a hell of a
pick. But you get it.
And it's pretty alcoholic. It's not a light
15
beer.
It's a 5 Imperial Stout. That's why I'm sipping it in the coffee cup slowly. But listen what it's brewed with. Honey roasted peanuts, peanut butter, vanilla, and cacao, right?
Oh.
So it's pretty... So I was scared it was going to be really sweet or really peanut buttery, and it's not. It tastes really well blended and
it's like
very
a peanut
mellow.
Butter cup.
It kind of... Somebody's like, this is like Reese's peanut butter cups without sugar distilled into a beer.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it's delicious. I've been sipping it very slowly because it's 15.5, but that I figured that's the perfect last beer pick as the co-host because this is my last show co-hosting Windows Weekly. I know, guys. I know. But hopefully I'm going to get to come back and be a guest sometime.
Anytime you want. You are always.
You know, I don't know about that, Leo. Let's see how things go.
Well, and until then, I'm going to move the ceremonial picture over. And we're
exactly.
Gonna put it right there.
Joe Belfiore will take over.
Yeah, you'll be there. Yeah, underneath your face is Joe Belfiore.
That's okay. That's all right. The reason I have to leave this post is I'm starting a new job next week, full time. I haven't worked full time in 20 years at a job. I'm working for Directions on Microsoft, my favorite Microsoft analysis firm based in Kirkland. I'm staying in New York, and I'm going to be the editor in chief.
That's pretty good.
I'm going to do. Fun content for them and help them get their content strategy together.
And you're going to podcast with them, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do. I do like audio only podcasts with their analysts because their analysts know all this stuff and it needs to be unlocked and brought to the public.
So, perfect for that.
Yeah.
Perfect for that.
We're going to cover only Enterprise. No Xbox, only Enterprise.
That's the real
reason.
That
sounds terrible. Are you sure?
That's the real reason.
I mean, do you want to think about that a little bit?
Enterprise, licensing, all the topics near and dear to my heart and many IT pros. So come over to directionsonmicrosoft.com and watch what happens.
Aw.
Well.
Mary Jo, it's been an amazing 11 years. It is a different show without you. Paul and I both agree, and we've talked.
You know, I bring a civilizing influence to the show.
I would resent that if it weren't so true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you two have become
No, it's been so fun.
Such
and
a team.
And I've learned so much about like public speaking and how to do podcasts. It's been fantastic.
Yep.
You guys have been great. Yep. Thank you. No song, please.
I won't sing a song, but I feel like I need to say a few things here. You know, I don't know what people see from the outside. I don't know if they understand our relationship or whatever, but many years ago we were rivals and didn't like each other, which is humorous now. Some of the cattiest things I've ever said in my life, I said about Mary Jo a million years ago, and I hate myself for it. But I just in general, I would say that for me, the more you get to know people, generally speaking, the less likable they are. And that has not been the case with Mary Jo at all. And she's a big exception to that rule. And,
thanks.
I just, from a professional perspective, whatever I've done in life, honestly, I value our partnership more than anything I've accomplished.
Aww.
And,
we're going to be friends still. Like we're still going to talk.
And we are friends out in real life, which is great. Cause we've traveled together, you know, you and me and my wife have traveled together and, we'll continue to do that.
Me and Stephanie gang up on Paul constantly. It's like really awesome. It's fantastic.
That part's, you know, kind of iffy, but the, you know, but yeah, we'll continue that of course. And, I can't tell the whole story, but I had a real Grinch moment with Mary Jo several years ago when we were traveling and she just told me something about her personal life, whatever. And I came home and I was talking to my wife's, I experienced something I'd never experienced before. And, I came home and my friend's wife at the time was a kind of a self-described kind of self-help guru type person. I said, I just got to tell you, I had this feeling I've never experienced in my life before. And can I just describe it to you? And you could just tell me what happened, because I felt really weird. And she said, after I told her what it was, she said, you experienced bliss. And I said, bliss? She says, yeah, it's just you just were so happy for someone else unselfishly. Aww. And I was like, oh, like, okay. I'm like the Grinch, you know, the sizes, his heart grew two sizes, you know, whatever. So that was my moment for, you know, anyway. So I love Mary Jo, and we'll be friends, you know, we'll be friends forever, of course. I'm just sorry to see you go from the podcast, but I know.
Thanks.
You'll still be part of my life, so
I will. And B. Jones had the perfect thing to say to all this in the Discord. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, the boys only wear pants because you're on the show. So
there is some truth to that.
That's an interesting angle. I hadn't really thought about that.
I mean, I usually do have my hand in my waistband the entire time, but
okay, we don't need to know the details. We really don't.
We call him Sweet Paul Thurrott.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
No, you guys have made it so fun. And you know what? I'm going to be back to guest. When you need a guest,
yeah,
and you're like, you know what we need? We need some enterprise content. Call me.
I don't know if we'll ever say that, but we will have you back.
You might.
Well, I will say that. I mean, we haven't Paul and I haven't really, we've talked, but we don't really know what we're going to do.
We're going to wing it for a little while. We'll have some guests come on and we'll try different things.
Yeah. But it's not the same show.
It's hard. You can't replicate what we've done. And there's a chemistry that you can't invent. It has to be there or it doesn't work.
Yep.
And
agree.
It's hard. Those things are hard to find. So, and whatever, you're not really replaceable. The truth is, I hope we find somebody, I guess, but it's not really ever going to be the same
be a different show, whatever.
You know what? It'll still be a good show. There'll just be somebody who isn't always going, guys, let's get back on topic and talk about the enterprise.
That's actually one of the criteria.
That is one of the issues, yeah.
For our next co-host.
Actually, we do need a third party with a gong.
Maybe
that's the prerequisite.
I could pass the gong on. It's fine.
It's impossible because we've looked at a lot of options. It's impossible to replace you, of course. But thank you.
Thank you, guys,
gracing
for
us with your presence for 11 years.
No, it's been
thank you for
amazing.
Putting up with this.
Yeah.
I've really learned a ton. Like I said, amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
It's all good. And you're going to see me on a show. You'll see me. And Sriracha's right here. He's like hunkered down.
Good.
He heard me talking and he's right here.
Okay, I guess for the last time, it's time for me to say goodbye to Mary Jo Foley. new home, directions on Microsoft.com, where she's the editor-in-chief.
Mm-hmm. I'll be back as that, and then we can talk enterprise and licensing, too. Woo!
Oh, be still my heart. good luck in your new... You're not moving back to Washington State, though. You're going to get to stay where you are.
I get to be remote, which is great.
Good. That's great.
Do you anticipate traveling occasionally to do in-person stuff? Yeah, nice.
Yes, beautiful Kirkland, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Very beautiful.
Yeah. Well, maybe Lisa and I, when we move up there, we'll see. We'll have a place for you to stay when you come out and visit. How about that?
Nice. Good.
Paul Thurrott, of course, Thurrott.com. And Field Guide to Windows 11 coming soon to leanpub.com.
Yeah.
We'll be back. We don't want to, but we'll be back next week, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. Live.twit.tv is the live stream. You can chat with us at irc.twit.tv or in our Discord. We've mentioned that several times. That's the Club Twit Discord, our little clubhouse where we hang out. We just crossed 5,000 members this morning, or I guess late last night. So thank you to all 5,000 Club Twit members. And I couldn't thank you enough. I really appreciate it because those $7 a month. And by the way, you can give more. We now have added. Some people said, well, that's too little. If you want to do more, we want to keep it as affordable as possible. Remember, Memberful, the arm of Patreon that runs this membership group, takes its cut. So we wanted to make it as low as we could reasonably, I think seven is fair, given you get ad-free versions of all the shows, the Discord, you get the behind-the-scenes stuff, you get shows we don't put out in public, like Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows. Please go to twit.tv/club and join the club. Going forward, 2023 is going to be a rough one, I think, and we would very much like to keep growing and going with your help. twit.tv/club. Mary Jo, you will always be a honored member of the club, and of course, you spend a lot of time in the Discord. I hope you will from time to time pop your head in.
Thanks.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see you there. Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. A sad day, but we'll be back next week. We got a soldier on, Paul and I, with another gripping edition of Windows. No more winners. It's just dozers now, Paul.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's all that's left.
That's all that's left. We'll see you next time. Bye, Mary Jo.
Bye, you guys.
Bye-bye.
See you soon. We'll see you again soon. Bye.
Goodbyes are always hard.
I feel like my kid's going off to college.
Look, she just hung up on us.
No, she's...
Jesus. She just, like, pushed the... She's like, thank God I'm done with those suckers.
That's good.
Boy, oh, boy.
You know what, Leo? We deserve it.
We do. We earned it.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.
System Center can be fun, guys. Yes. It can be.
Yes. Mary Jo Foley, she's the greatest. All about Microsoft.com, her great ZDNet blog. We welcome her to the Windows Weekly podcast. It's official now. She's going to have to come back every week. And Paul finally can go on vacation. Thank you. It's great to have you, Mary Jo. It really is.